pledge of allegiance, that's a great gift.
Jim? What?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. To the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please excuse.
Now that we're taking a closed session, I now go to the board. Board approves the following round of recommendations regarding the expulsion of students EH21-22/13 through EH21-22/19. By unanimous vote of the board approves all staff recommendations regarding the attendance expulsion contract of student EH21-22/17 through EH21-22/25. Presentation will be that Dr. Francisco Rebellus and his team, Dr. Rebellus. President Rustin, members of the board, the study meeting of Dr. Rebellus and the superintendent of school, people of the building, I would extend our respect and sincere esteem to the audience and the
Yes, we did count it.
No, we did.
Absolutely.
Trustee Bush? Trustee Brown?
Last Friday I got to spend the day at Abe Lincoln Alternative Ed.
You want to raise your hand and your microphone on?
You know, I did this thing.
I probably should not be.
What was that at?
Oh, yeah, it was at the Alternative Ed right down the block here. Great bunch of people. We have now almost 500 employees growing. I just couldn't think how many teachers were there interacting and stuff. And it's been an excellent program. It was unintended. Thank you.
Trustee
Gutter?
Trustee Gutter?
I just want to thank half the board for their condolences to the family members that lost their child. This is going to be killed. Having a motorcycle bike, they dream. One of those things just happened, I guess. It's really sad that they will do a strong one out there. I know it's just something around it. And, kids get hurt. Yeah. In fact, it's easier to kill. I'll congratulate you.
I would just like to commend Siobhan Matthews and her team this week. The board got a copy of their lawsuit in our package.
And it's a tremendous amount of work that goes into developing a WASC report. It's kind of a guiding light for where the school or the high school is going to go for the next, hopefully, 6 years when it gets reviewed. But trying to do all that tremendous amount of work with what we've done in the last 2 years, it's been monumental. So thank you to Mrs. Matthews and her team. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen, the rest of the board, superintendent, and those in attendance this evening. Angela Stiegel, president for the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. And first off this evening, UTA would like to acknowledge and thank our veterans, both those who are living and with us, for us to thank, but also those who have passed, including in my own family, my uncle who fought in Vietnam and then came home and worked with the Yuba County Sheriff's Department. And so our veterans give a tremendous amount of themselves, not only to our country, but to our communities. And so we want to acknowledge and appreciate them. Mere words don't seem to do quite justice, but we would like to thank them for everything they have done for us, both individually and collectively. Additionally, since we don't have another board meeting before Thanksgiving, maybe a little early, but we would like to wish everybody a very peaceful and restful Thanksgiving when we get to that. We would like to acknowledge and thank our teachers. We have 500 of the most dedicated, hardworking educators in the state and in the nation right here in Marysville Joint Unified. And so we want to acknowledge all of their hard work, again, at this point in time. May seem like just words, but we hope on MUTA's front that they hear us, and we hope that the district hears us as well. Recently, we also have had two collaborative efforts going on between the teachers union and the district that we would like to acknowledge and voice our appreciation for that fact. One having to do with the common assessments project that we are just kind of getting started, but MUTA has been working with, meeting with Amy Stratton. We have spoken with Rocco Greco, also the superintendent, and so it seems like we have kind of a bare-bones skeleton project timeline going on, but even having that joint collaborative effort is appreciated. Additionally, on the agenda this evening, you see an educator effectiveness grant plan that I will have a couple more specifics on later, but we met yesterday. We had members of MUTA and our curriculum consulting team and some of our exec board members. No problem. Who met with Rocco Greco. Speaking of Siobhan Matthews, she was also there on the site admin front. We also had our literacy TOSAs, as well as Alicia Wright. So we had a pretty representative group there, and it really felt like a collaborative effort. So that is another thing we would like to voice our appreciation for. That is something that we have long wanted and that we ask for a great deal, and so to have some of that is appreciated. Also, when you look at the agenda this evening, you will see that both MUTA and Marysville Joint Unified have our Sunshine proposals on the agenda for our bargaining and negotiations. We thought it might be helpful for people to hear, to realize, may even find it interesting, to let you know that our peers, our colleagues just across the river, have announced a recent settlement, a 3-year settlement. Starting for 2019-20, 2% ongoing, for last year, 2% ongoing, and for this year, 3% ongoing. And so just across the river, Yuba City Unified, the teachers there will see over a 5% salary increase when you compound things. And so as a reminder, your teachers here are asking for 5% for this year because we took no ongoing monies for last year. And so what we're asking for is a salary increase in order to keep up with the cost of living. However, that will not even amount to a raise of any kind because of that. And so we would like to be able to get these contract negotiations settled. And a lot of this is going to, I fear, rest on the monetary end of things. But what we're asking for and what we've been asking for months now is more than fair and reasonable. And so we hope that we can get there, maybe some more of these collaborative efforts. But your teachers need and deserve, at the very least, the 5% that has been proposed. Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you, Angela. Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3.
Good evening, President Rasmussen and board and staff. My name is Felix Mario Huerta, Jr., and I represent 350 employees here at Marysville Unified School District, Joint Unified School District. I spoke last week, and one of the things I wanted to bring to your attention is we did have a very productive meet and greet session with the new superintendent, Dr. Fall, and so we were able to, in a sense, turn the page, start a new chapter, and have direct communication and networking to resolve issues. I've been given contacts for Dr. Rocco Greco as well as Ms. Pasalia. And so we're hoping that through these connections, we're able to raise issues in a timely fashion, get responses in a timely fashion, and to move forward to continue to do a good job for the staff and students that we have here. With regard to issues, I mean, here's a very strange issue that came up, and I just want to bring it to your attention. On occasion, an employee will call in sick. On occasion, an employee may call in sick and not have time on the books, right? Somebody doesn't have any time on the books. Unfortunately, a circumstance took place in transportation where an employee was out for 9 days, didn't have time on the books, but somehow the payroll system paid her as though she worked. And so she ended up with a paycheck, which she cashed in and used. The following month, it was discovered that there was a payroll error. The error was deducted from her paycheck, the next paycheck, without any communication to the employee. She saw her paycheck. It was less than a quarter of what her normal paycheck would be. We brought this to your attention. You cannot deduct pay from an employee unless they agree that there was a payroll error. No communication took place with the employee. From the department to payroll to today, she still has not gotten this resolved. And so that needs to get resolved because a lot of folks, especially in our classifications, live paycheck to paycheck. And so had she been told, oh, by the way, you were out sick and you don't have any sick leave, it shouldn't have been paid in the first place. But somehow the system paid her. And now it's been kind of clawed back without any agreement. So We have dealt with this in terms of a formal grievance, but the system should not have done this in the first place. So we hope that that gets resolved. The second thing that I'd like to bring your attention is when changes happen regarding conditions of employment, wages, benefits, and conditions of employment, we need to make sure that if a change impacts an employee's conditions out at the work site, even things that are unwritten, local rules, things that happen at the work site, we need to know that there's a change so that if it impacts an employee, we can deal with that. In terms of transferring bargaining at work, I brought that up the other day. We have a grievance that we filed for that particular issue, and we hope that we can get this resolved quickly because we do certain work here, and it needs to be protected, and it needs to be acknowledged that this belongs to this unit. So we hope that these matters can get resolved quickly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lorcher. Next, we have California Employee Association number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. Next, we have public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out public comment cards before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or the superintendent. Before I finish or go on there, Russell, I was just, were we going to have, so Mrs. Hasty is joining the meeting. You're there? Okay, I thought I was going to get to see your picture, but... Okay, well, I don't think we'll need it now, but maybe when we go to voting on things, Russell will probably need it, so...
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, regular board meeting. The public may address topics not on the agenda during the section during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per Board Bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. Okay, so we do have a number of public comment cards. Some of these have to do with specific items that we already are in the agenda. So I'll ask if you want to talk about it now or if you want to wait till that agenda item comes up. So first we have Angela Stiegel. Angela, do you want to wait till the item or you want to talk now?
I'm going to wait till the agenda item. Thank you.
Okay. Next we have Joanna Lasaga. Boundaries, you want to speak about that now?
Well, technically there's eight of them.
Yep.
So there's one that says for public comment, and I'd like to speak on the public comment one now. There's eight cards up there in my name, and the rest of them I would like to speak on the agendized item.
Okay.
So good evening, Joanna Lasaga. I am here tonight to encourage all of you to stand for what you believe in. I'm asking all of you to stand up and be the leaders that you are in these board positions. There is not one reason why MJUSD cannot be on the forefront to stop all of this tyranny that is going on. You do not have to cave to the CDC, CDPH, OSHA, CFBA, and any of the other alphabet soup that is floating around these days. The divide that I have seen in the last board meetings needs to stop. We need to be united and see both sides of the issues. The board, the parents, and the community need to be united. At each meeting that I attend, I see a further divide. Perhaps sitting down and seeing where these parents are coming from is what you as board members are supposed to be doing. You are supposed to be representing your constituents. Those parents are the ones who can help in classrooms and can help better build a better school district. The parents would not feel so unappreciated if only they were listened to. They have ideas and opinions, and they need to be heard. The parents know what is best for their children. When is the last time any of you heard from your parents or the members of the community? It is time that you start reaching out to them and see how you can help them and see if they have any ideas to make MJUSD better. The board needs to be a leader in the community, and that means that you need to listen to what people have to say and build a bridge together through all of these difficult times. MJUSD needs to be strong and stick together to build a better school and receive better test scores and encourage all of the students to be better and to do better. There is strength in numbers, and I am asking you tonight to use your strength to build a tighter community by your actions and join the parents in their beliefs and go forward together. And if I just may say, there's a lot of tough decisions tonight on this agenda, and may God bless you all and give you all the strength to find it in your hearts to do what's right.
Next we have Joanna Lasaga, Outlay of Special Reserves. Want to speak on that now? So Joanna, I don't see an item, agenda item with teamwork. Is that what you just talked on?
No. Oh, that was the public comment.
Well, the first one you turned in first, you said you wanted to talk about boundaries.
No, that was not the first one. That was for the boundaries for the redistricting.
Well, I was going by the way that you turned in the cards. Because we numbered the cards. So the one that you turned in first was with regards to boundaries.
Mr. Appleton, I don't know what order they are.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if they got shuffled or what have you, but there was a public comment one. If you look at the box in the upper right-hand corner, there's public comment, and then there's an agendized item. And I believe there was one that was public comment.
Okay. So I think it sounds like you just talked about teamwork to me.
I'd like you guys to be a team.
Okay, so we'll put that one back in. Make sure. Okay, next we have Sandra Malo. Sandra?
Thank you, Board. I'm speaking on the resolution 2021-2210. You may think this is a good resolution, and on its face it appears that way. But it isn't doing anything more than pretending to have an ad hoc committee for the parents, teachers, and staff to tell us you are following state guidelines. This vaccination is killing people. People that are in mid-air flying our passenger airplanes are dying. Kids whose parents thought the government had their best interests at heart. It's causing heart issues, myocarditis, in teen boys. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And you are going along with the government because you are worried about losing your credentials. Do you understand what standing up for what is right is about? You are actively allowing the government to tell us what we can do with our bodies, even if that means being maimed, sterile, or having heart or other serious conditions. For a virus that almost every single child without life-threatening diseases can survive. This is madness. You should have been petitioning the state way before now. And you should be following the lead of other school districts such as Happy Valley, who said no to the mandate. Let's ask them why they aren't worried about their credentials or their insurance. No one said this would be easy, but we aren't going away. You can respectfully ask the CDPH to allow you to do things, or you can band together, like other school districts are, who have stood up for their staff and their students' health. Do something about it. Get your ad hoc committee on that.
Next, we have Teresa Anderson. Teresa?
Good evening. My name is Teresa Anderson, and my husband and I are against COVID-related mandates. We are residents of Marysville, parents of school-aged children, and employees of MJUSD. My husband is a school bus driver, and I am a special education teacher for the Emotionally Disturbed program at Lyndhurst High School. We love our jobs and have considered ourselves fortunate to be part of this community and district, serving the population of students that we do. We love them. My husband holds coloring contests for his kids for prizes that he pays for out of his own pocket. He notices the needs of his students and tries to help. It's more than just a job for him. This is also true for me. The students I teach have often come from trauma-filled backgrounds and have difficulty trusting adults. I take it very seriously that I, along with the amazing team I work with, am meeting my students' needs, that I am not only teaching but also nurturing, building trust, and helping the students to learn life skills, create a plan for their future, graduate, and become productive members of society. I share all this with you so that you can hopefully appreciate who we are and how personal this is to us. So many families are choosing simply to leave California as a result of the clear government overreach happening all around us with no end in sight. We don't want to do that. Our jobs and the commitments we made to serve our students are important to us. But what is also important to us is to stand up for what we believe to be right, which is that people should be able to choose to be vaccinated according to their personal beliefs and individual circumstances. My husband and I are not going to get the COVID vaccine, and we are not going to allow our children to get it either. We do not want to lose our jobs, and we don't want to pull our children out of their schools. It is not reasonable that either of these situations would happen, should happen, as we are a healthy family with strong immune systems. Our bodies have already recovered from COVID, and we do not need medical assistance from a vaccine. It has been stated by medical professionals that COVID vaccine mandates are both illegal as a matter of law and unsafe as a matter of science, as the shots do not stop transmission of the Delta variant and should be considered as personal treatment choices only. Others have stated that vaccinating already COVID-recovered persons, including children, could be very harmful. Vaccines are not called for in healthy children because children are very rarely becoming ill from COVID. Many California school boards have or are voting to pass resolutions opposing mandates that require all students and staff to submit to COVID-19 vaccines for on-site attendance and employment. We ask that the MJUSD board do the same clearly and unequivocally. We fundamentally believe that everyone has a right to choose what is best for their own health without coercion or force.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Next, we have the correspondence to the district. We'll have a 6-minute presentation followed by a maximum board discussion of 10 minutes. We have an update from the Yuba County Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Francisco Reveles. The county superintendent will provide an overview of issues and challenges facing our schools. The presentation will underscore and highlight the close collaboration between YCOE and MJUSD. Dr. Reveles.
Hello again, members of the board. Clearly, in 6 minutes, I better be to the point. And I want to do justice to the issues that are in front of us here, ladies and gentlemen. This morning I did an almost an hour presentation to the Board of Supervisors on the state of education in Yuba County. Almost an hour. So again, out of respect for the issues, all I can do right now is really highlight them, but also I'm aware that the need to also share with some of the new board members what the County Office of Education does. For me, it's first things first. We've got some information we're going to pass out to you, but clearly, in my discussions that I've had with Superintendent Asrani, and again, I want to welcome you. Okay, it's a pleasure, my respect to you. There are really four compelling issues, and I'm sure you're very well aware of them. Social-emotional supports, a lot of research on that. I shared some of that this morning with the Board of Supervisors. Excellent questions, as I'm sure you have also. Also, the issue of special education. We've engaged in extended discussions, Dr. Asrani, with my team, your team as well. The issues of special education services, the costs, et cetera. Incidentally, the skyrocketing autism rates in Yuba County. Those are all compelling issues, okay? Again, I wish I could go in-depth, but because of the time, I want to highlight those, special education. Along with that, certainly career technical education. Quite a variety, ladies and gentlemen. As a county superintendent, certainly I'm concerned about that. Concerned, but also encouraged. There are so many beautiful things going on in the county. Certainly Lyndhurst High School, Marysville, Wheatland High School, excellent models. As a county superintendent, my role, my duty, I believe, is to help facilitate not only graduating with a career technical background, but also the ability to enter the employment community here in Yuba County. And to that end, we've been meeting with labor leaders. We've been meeting with the Chamber of Commerce. That's an ongoing issue, ongoing progress in that. So that's the other one. Then the last one clearly is the one that's been referenced here today. Very compelling, clearly. The pandemic and certainly the legal issues associated with that. Those issues I cannot go into because of the time constraints, but rest assured with Dr. Asrani, we'll be sharing with you some legal briefs that I have received regarding legal liability as well. Those are things, and I'm being very candid with you. Clearly, it's a complex issue. We've heard the parents. Compelling issues, ladies and gentlemen, but again, because of the time. Having said that, are there any questions? I know it's rather brief because I'm going to go to the second part. I've got, I think, about three more minutes. Okay. All right. The second part deals with, so what does the County Office of Education do, ladies and gentlemen? Bobby, can you assist me here, please? They're right over there. Excellent. There's two things I'd like to share with you. Excuse me. One looks like this. You'll get a copy of this. This really breaks down what the County Office of Education does, why we advocate for what we do. I think you can see here that we do work in support of the districts. One of the key functions of the County Office of Education is to facilitate the implementation of the Brown Act. That's very important. That's very sacred to all of us, the Brown Act. Clearly, the discussions we're having here are across the county, across the state, across the nation, ladies and gentlemen. So this one will outline what we do. The second one I'd like to share with you is this one. This one's called Superintendent Stakeholder Panel. Let me repeat that. Superintendent Stakeholder Panel on Student Safety and Security. Life will continue as we move forward. Before COVID, we had issues that dealt with school safety. I got a number of calls from many board members across Yuba County. They wanted to know what's the best research that deals with school safety. God forbid we have another one. More than likely, the way things are going, ladies and gentlemen, we need to be prepared, as I'm sure you'll agree. I'm talking about school safety. I'm talking about shooters on campus. I'm talking about hardening facilities. That takes a lot of research with us. What we did is we did a compilation, which we'll share with you also. It's for your use, and it outlines specific best practices in terms of making a school safer. Now, again, I want to underscore the fact that as the county superintendent of schools, we're not here to, clearly, we would never dictate to you, but it's to support what you're doing, to make sure, again, that the Brown Act is, in fact, being implemented, and that people have the opportunity to express their opinion. This one right here presents research for you to consider when it comes to school safety as well. That's a decision you make. We do it in collaboration with the superintendent, with yourselves, and we are here as a resource, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? So rather quick, we will pass this out. Dr. Asrani, can I leave a stack here and we pass them out later? Very good. I think I got a minute left. Ladies and gentlemen, questions? All right. Thank you, President Rasmussen. I do appreciate your time. I will be back. Thank you.
I would, Russell, if you could then go ahead and start at 10-minute, because board, if you have any questions or discussion, we have a 10-minute time limit for board to discuss or ask questions.
One of the questions is, how do we pay for this?
I'm sorry, what's that?
How do we pay for all this? the state has still not owned up to their obligation passed by the residents of California to fully fund these education systems. And so here we are. We are doing our best with the COVID funding. But what you're talking about is significant improvements to our safety of our campuses and our district offices. And so that becomes the problem as far as what boards can do and what a superintendent and her staff can do if we do not have that kind of money.
Yeah. Board Member Davis, there was a president, and bear with me here, I think this will speak to the point. A president, a U.S. president, I can't recall right now his name. In his office, he was approached in the Oval Office by a group of constituents. They made their case, whatever the issue was, but it was important, clearly. And when he was done, he said, I believe you, I agree with you. Not go out there and put pressure on me to do it. The point I'm trying to make is this, ladies and gentlemen, and back to your question, it does involve advocacy. The issues that we're seeing here today, the issues you talked about, school safety, I'm completely with you on that. It costs money. But ultimately, it's about also putting pressure on the legislature, ladies and gentlemen. That's where the policies arrive, whether it's about COVID, school safety, et cetera. I don't have a simplistic view of reality. The fact of the matter is, and I've spoken twice to Governor Newsom, once in his office, once through Zoom. I asked about the mandates. I asked about the conflicting issues regarding that. That was a personal conversation, well, actually, along with a couple of the other superintendents. The bottom line is this, is that at the legislative level, we need that support. But it also talks about raw political pressure, ladies and gentlemen. Growing up, I grew up on the streets in a border town. And I always like to make the analogy that growing up on a border town, I dealt with a lot of violence. Six-year-old, if you ever cross the border and you see those kids selling chiclets, that was me growing up. You learn to survive. Now, why am I sharing this story with you? Because there's an implication for the question that's posed today. I grew up thinking, knowing that the best way to be safe is to have bigger brothers and cousins and sisters. Okay? Now, what does that have to do with this? Nowadays, it's called coalition building. Reach across the aisle, talk to other people. I have gone and I've testified more than once at the Capitol on gun safety and those issues, but it's when you gotta be there on the line, when you have those sessions to go there, I urge you to go to those sessions. This public policy session, speak to the legislators. Ultimately, it is, as you know so well, you have constituents as well, huh? Clearly, they bring a lot of pressure, and that's the way the American system is set up. I think that's a great system, but it takes a lot of work. It's about that advocacy at the legislative level. Certainly at the local level, we have great representatives, but that's also got to manifest itself at the state capitol. Thank you.
Dr. Revelles, when you started your presentation, you said there was four items that you wanted to touch on. It seems like you got to two. What would be the third item?
Well, there were four. One was social-emotional support, given the COVID, the implications. We have seen an increase on what we call 5150s. Those are suicide attempts in the county. That was part of my presentation this morning. That was an hour presentation. Clearly, we've had students have been seeing social-emotional, the need that they have, the suicide rate. We have an increasing homeless young people in the community as well. Marysville, I think we had 150, if I'm not mistaken, homeless youth. Okay. The other one is special needs, special education, Mr. Rasmussen. The expense and the fact that the federal government is not allocating the correct funds that need to be allocated for our students, but that is the reality we work in. We're also talking about how do we save money with regards to special education, as I noted, and it's a great, very candid discussion with Dr. Asrani about what can we do best. Certainly the interest of Marysville Unified and across the board. Yuba County Office of Education, we serve the moderate to severe, the students who need the most, but that also requires a lot of support, financial in terms of staffing. That's a compelling issue. That is a work in progress, and that's the one, as I said, in working with Dr. Asrani, we're addressing that. We're looking at that. The third one is career technical education. One of the things that I ran into in talking to labor was, and this is very anecdotal, but it speaks to the issue. Right now in Yuba County, we do have an exodus of youth that are leaving Yuba County. They speak the truth. They talk about their futures, what's going on. And so when I had a conversation with a group of labor leaders, one of them pointed out to me, this was just about a year ago, about 15 of them labor leaders. They said, you know, Dr. Revelles, we have apprenticeships that go begging. And when we do get students who come to the apprenticeships, their average age is 30 years old. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. They're saying, what is happening by the time they leave the high school to us? Why are we getting them so late? We're working with the Chamber of Commerce. Certainly, Dr. Asrani, us with your team working together on it, because I know you have a priority on career technical education. For us, it's to support what you're doing, but also to create linkages between employment. My dream would be to have a school counselor, I'm speaking to you as a former head school counselor, where a school counselor can reach when a student comes to see them. College, great. Community college, university, Air Force Academy, that's great. They can also reach over and find out about what the military, we respect that. But also my dream would be that they also reach out. These are apprenticeships that are available to you right now in that same breath. So that's going to take some work. Again, we are working with the Chamber of Commerce. We have met with a number of labor leaders. So as you can see, that's a work in progress. So that's the third one, Mr. Rasmussen. And then the fourth one, and there are more, ladies and gentlemen, is the pandemic. One thing that became very clear, and that's a brief that I have on my desk, says that one of the considerations is that now board members do have personal legal liability, depending on how you respond. Now, that's a very loaded statement. I realize that. And again, I will clarify with Dr. Asrani. We get together again, Dr. Asrani. But that is a legal brief. I asked our legal counsel to give us some clarification. Depending on which way the board decides, certainly I respect the views that are expressed. I do. But it does carry liability, and I think in this case, they highlighted as personal liability. You notice how the landscape changed? That is very different, ladies and gentlemen. Clearly, it's a complex issue. I don't presume to have the answer, but the fact is it's about engaging each other. Mr. Rasmussen, those were the four. There's clearly more to that, but I'll stop right there, sir.
Thank you. Is there any other comments or questions? Thank you very much, Dr.
Thank you, President Rasmussen. Thank you, members of the board. Dr. Asrani, my respect. Thank you.
Next, we have two presentations for Cedar Lane Elementary School and then Edgewater Elementary. Who's this? Everett? Yes.
We're ready. Perfect. Thank you, Russell.
Good evening, President Rasmussen, members of the board, Superintendent Asrani. My name is Rebecca Evers. Can you hear me from here?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Rebecca Evers. I'm the principal at Cedar Lane Elementary. This is an opportunity to share with you our SIPSA, or Single Plan for Student Achievement. Our mission statement was a collaborative effort between all of our staff members. It was created before I was attending as principal at Cedar Lane and revisited this year. Mission statement, education today for empowerment tomorrow, and the pieces that staff chose to add to their mission and vision statement was they really wanted to make sure that their students are productive members of society prepared to pursue college and career pathways. The purpose of our plan, the SIPSA is an annual plan that designs our academic behavioral plan. It is an opportunity to expend our Title I budget, and it's an opportunity for parents and students to work together on the school site council to build this plan in order to meet the needs of our students together. A part of building the plan is an opportunity for us to have a comprehensive needs assessment, understanding what the needs of the students are, understanding what the desires of the parents, the input of all of our stakeholders, analyzing that data and then creating a plan that meets the needs of our school site is part of our annual needs assessment. I'm sorry, with my glasses, I have a hard time going from the computer and to the screen. So if you don't want me to turn this just slightly. Thank you. So one of the things I wanted to talk with you today is that at Cedar Lane Elementary, in looking at our data, we've really had a history of low performance in reading and in math. And in specifically in reading, our school was awarded the ELSB, or the Early Support Literacy Grant. And in that grant, we talked a little bit in August about what that grant looked like, the components of the grant, and that at Cedar Lane Elementary, the plan with that grant through the SIPSA, or through the single plan, was in order to take the grant, which was designated for grades K through 3, and extend it all the way through grades 4, 5, 6, and have a school-wide implementation of efforts that are focused on improving reading for all of our students at our school. So part of improving those efforts is creating a multi-tiered system of support. And so I just wanted to share this with you and explain a little bit about what an MTSS system looks like. And then we'll give a little bit of information about our goals and how we're going to achieve our goals, and then come back and revisit the MTSS triangle at the end of the presentation. In a multi-tiered system of support, we're looking at an academic system, we're looking at social-emotional support, and we're looking at behavioral supports for our students. In a Tier 1, 2, and 3 triangle here, you'll see that our goal is to create a foundational Tier 1 level of support, both academically and behaviorally, that serves all of our students. And when we are doing Tier 1 support well, we are seeing 70 to 80%, all the way up to hopefully 90% of our students achieving, they're having access to the core curriculum, they're having access to that first best instruction, they're having access to that behavioral support and social emotional support, and that is meeting the needs of the majority of 90% of our students. As you go up the tiers to Tier 2 and Tier 3, you'll see more targeted intervention. What that means at Tier 2 is there's a percentage of our students that need additional support, and we should have systems in place in order to provide additional academic, behavioral, social, emotional support. And then when you get up to Tier 2 or Tier 3, then you should see an opportunity for students to have more individualized support, potentially even more family support. So we're working at Cedar Lane Elementary specifically through the grant and through our single plan and our school site council to develop our Tier 1 and Tier 2 supports. Data that you will see that we use is response to intervention, progress monitoring. DIBELS is a program that we talked about that we brought in through the grant, grade levels for all grade levels. We do have it implemented. BOI, B-O-I, M-O-I, E-O-I, just so we know what those acronyms stand for, beginning of the year, middle of the year, end of the year data. So we are not only looking at our summative data, we're looking at our state data at the end of the year, but what we're looking for is having consistency across the board at our school from the beginning of the year, middle of the year, end of the year. So by the time our students get to our state assessment data, we are already assessing them, monitoring them, looking at their progress and interventions so that we have a really strong idea of what our students' needs are and how we're addressing our students' needs. We have four goals in our single plan. Goal one talks about how we're providing our students with high-quality first instruction through collaborative professional learning communities, providing supportive systems in order to meet our academic needs of all Cedar Lane students. It's talking about that academic progress that we want to see for our students. In school goal two, we're talking about positive, safe, and healthy environments and developing our school-wide expectations. This is where you're going to see work on our PBIS and our school-wide expectations acknowledgement systems and those systems that are supporting behavior and social emotional learning. In goal three, we're looking at increasing parent, family, and community involvement. And in goal four, looking at serving our EL students. Goal one strategies. Goal one and two is where Cedar Lane Elementary has put the majority of the work so far this year. We have met with our school site council, I think we've met three times. So we haven't met an annual calendar where we meet monthly. We took our plan that was put in place from last year, and we really had to get to work on it to make sure that we were integrating the work that we needed to do that included our ELSB grant and included the needs of our students moving forward, coming back from COVID, both academically and behaviorally. So in Goal 1 strategies, you'll see us working on things like professional development for our teachers, professional learning communities, providing supplementary instructional curriculum. Bulk of the money in Title I is spent here for paraeducator support. Cedar Lane has 9 paraeducators that are employed through Title I funding in order to support MTSS, or multi-tiered system of support. It's targeted intervention in reading. So we're working in every grade level to provide that extra support so students can get extra targeted instruction in reading to improve their reading skills. We're looking at implementing ELSB TK through grade 6, improving our instructional technology, using online resources in our DIBELS, making sure that all teachers have supplementary materials, resources, supplies, and an opportunity to supplement the library. So we have not fully integrated the ELSB funding into our SIPSA, but that is our plan to do throughout the school year. And so there's grant monies for the library, and we've also secured some Title I funding through our SIPSA to help support our library. Progress in Goal 1, you can see we have quite a list of things that we've accomplished this year, and we have a list of things that is what's next for us. Supplementary support to all grade levels with ELSB, developing the MTSS system. We've collected our beginning of the year data, and we've met together as grade level teams to analyze that data, and we have put target intervention teams together moving forward. Our teachers are currently in the middle of progress monitoring, which is reassessing students' skills to make sure that they're continuing to make that progress in reading. We had our core coach. We, through our grant and through the SPSA, we have funded a core coach that comes and meet with us and helps support our teachers. They're going to be working with us on our core curriculum and Wonders implementation. And we have a number of areas that we're going to be addressing throughout the school year. In Goal 2 strategies, this is the PBIS, or school culture, school safety. The PBIS team has been created. It has representation from every grade level, both classified and certificated, and a parent on our panel. We have taken the tiered fidelity inventory, which is a rubric that tells us where we currently are in our implementation of PBIS Tier 1, and we have created a goal. We're currently at about 28% implementation, and by the end of the year, our goal is to be at or above a 70% implementation. So we have had an opportunity to sit down and revise our behavior expectations. We're working on our acknowledgement system. We're redesigning some professional development opportunities for our teachers. And one of the big things about the PBIS team is we're working really hard to make sure that it is teacher-led and teacher-initiated so that it has lasting power. That as we develop these opportunities and we bring them to our staff, that it sticks at Cedar Lane Elementary for years to come. Goal 2 progress. PBIS team meets monthly. We are also participating in training through MJUSD and Placer County Office of Education. We're developing professional development, bringing it to teachers, and making it a collaborative process throughout our school. Goal 3 and Goal 4 are areas that I've met with our school site council and our ELAC, and we continue to make progress in those areas. It has not been a complete area of focus. It is on our next school site council to review these goals and make sure that they continue to meet our needs and make updates as necessary. So at the beginning of the meeting, I took you a little bit through this triangle and talked with you about the MTSS system. And if we look at our data right now at Cedar Lane Elementary, our percentages are not where they are. In fact, we have 80% to 85% of our students needing Tier 2 supports. And through our processes that we've identified, the professional learning communities, the efforts through our academic teams and through our PBIS teams, we are looking at beefing up our Tier 1 processes so that our students are getting what they need both academically, behaviorally, through the social-emotional needs, and so that we can have many, many more of our students coming back down into the Tier 1 support, which is the supports that every student gets consistently, viable curriculum, the supports throughout the classroom and throughout the school site, so that they are operating at a Tier 1 status and not needing those Tier 2 supports. So our goal is to bring our numbers back into Tier 1 throughout this school year. Our budget is listed here for you. And then we do fun stuff, too. So we hosted our first annual Halloween costume parade. We had Red Ribbon Week, and it just so happened that Friday fell on the end of October, and the kids had an opportunity to dress up. And I really don't know who had more fun, the kids or the staff. They dressed up, had fun. We invited our parents into our parking lot, and they were able to take pictures, and we had a parade with our grade level so the kids could go around and greet their parents, and we had a great time. Any questions?
Any comments or questions from board members?
Well, I am very impressed with how you've hit the ground running. I know it had to have been more than just a little challenge coming in after we've been gone for almost 2 years with the COVID. So thank you for all your hard work. This is incredible to see this kind of progress. Knowing where you are is half the battle.
Thank you.
And knowing where you want to go is the other half of the battle. And it seems like you've tackled both. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. I've just got to say on that note, there is none of this that would have been accomplished if I didn't have the staff that I have. The staff that I have recognizes where they are, recognizes where their students are, and wants to provide better for them, and they are ready to go. If it was not for them, none of this would be happening. And I appreciate them every single day.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you.
I would also like to say thank you to you and your staff, Mrs. Evers. Thank you.
Thank you, President Rasmussen. I appreciate that. I'll make sure I let them know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is everybody here yet? I just got to tell you, I had a couple of staff members that really wanted to be here that were texting me on the way here, go, could you please let them know we wanted to be there? Just something came up. So I had about five people text me and say, we're not able to make it. So they wanted to be here, and they appreciate you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Edgewater Elementary. Mrs. Gay, Mrs. Luda. Guy, not gay. Hi, Lori. I changed your name.
Gay guy, used to get us mixed up all the time. Good evening, Dr. Estrani, members of the board, cabinet, and members of the audience. We are pleased to be able to show off a little bit of our school to you tonight and hopefully answer some questions you might be having. We welcome every year the Edgewater Floats. We serve root beer floats to students, and you talk a lot about the social emotional learning that has had to happen this year. And one of the best things that happened this year for our students was going back to our annual event. We weren't able to have it last year, but students are served root beer floats, and you see our mascot attended and greeted the students. Students are able to see who their teachers are, and this happens the day before school starts. So students already know who their teacher is. They have the opportunity to go view their classroom, take a tour. Parents are given information from the teachers. The teachers this year did both classroom tours and also virtual presentations. If they had a virtual presentation, or if they had an in-person presentation, they also had a question and answer session that was virtual, so parents that weren't able to attend could be there, and they sent out to all of their parents a copy of the presentation. So everyone was included in our welcome event or had an opportunity to be in that event. At Edgewater, we have the motto, teamwork makes the dream work. And that statement you'll hear repeatedly through our campus. You'll see it on the walls. And it kind of sums up our vision statement, which is staff collaboration drives learning, engaging our diverse community of learners in a safe, positive environment. The outcomes that we work on continuously are students reading at grade level, thinking critically, thinking creatively, solving problems, and applying a knowledge set to reach goals and to work collaboratively. That students and staff learn to work collaboratively. We currently have 508 students, so we've continued to grow. And as an example, in 2018-19, we had 482 students. So our school continues to expand and grow every year, every week sometimes. Yeah, we've been floating between 505 and 510 for the past few weeks. We developed a school plan for student achievement, like all of our schools do, and you'll see that this information is really consistent. But the children all have an opportunity to receive fair, equitable, and high-quality education. And the way that we do that is we work on identifying where there may be potential gaps and we work to close those gaps. And we work to make sure and ensure that all students have the opportunity to learn. And we do this on a repeating cycle where we get information from our parents, from through site council, PTO, ELAC, staff meetings, parent phone calls. There are so many times when Mrs. Buda or I talk to a parent on the phone or our office staff puts information to it, like, hey, a parent suggested this. And you'll see an example a little bit later. Like, we take all of those ideas in and we keep them, and as we can implement and bring them in, we do. When we look at making our comprehensive needs assessment, we gather the information in multiple ways. The district compiles some surveys and we get some data that way. We also do some of our own surveys. And again, we get the information from parents in some informal ways as well. And then we meet with our teachers. We get information from the teachers and staff. The information that we gather on support services, library books and services, after-school tutoring, EL learner needs, and safety, those are all the areas that parents have given us and staff have given us support and their direction with. During the last year, we didn't have a lot of the assessments, and so we used a lot of STAR data assessment, accelerated reading goals and awards, communication logs, and teacher and grade level assessments, and program assessments and reports for our evaluation. So we looked for the evidence we had of the programs we'd implemented of being a success. And that's what we used for our evaluation documents. Here's an example. The topic was Title I funding carryover, the wish list, and we wanted one-time expenditures. Well, we started getting a lot of things that weren't necessary things we'd fund with Title I funding, or maybe aren't allowable with Title I funding. But we still put those on this chart that's in my office. And so as we have special funding sources or special funding, we can implement what we can. And some of these came from the teachers. Some of them came from parents. One of the requests that came from parents were parenting classes on conscious discipline. That's also one that staff brought up. Library hours being increased was another one, and we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to our goals. Feedback we got from families, they want after-school tutoring, they want help, they want their student to have activities after school. Love our STARS program. They would like to see that expanded. They would like help in tutoring in math facts, early literacy group. Or these are ones that we have implemented based on their request. We've got a fifth and sixth grade math support group, a homework club on Wednesdays, and the students stay until 4. It's a drop-in basis. If the parents don't want them to stay till 4, they don't have to stay till 4. But most of them end up staying until at least an hour or two after school. And that really helps with the minimum days as well. And we have paraeducators covering that. We have a teacher that is now available for an hour and a half at night doing virtual tutoring and homework support for second through sixth graders. And that was another request for parents. They get home from work. They don't have the time, you know, they don't have the knowledge to help the students with how it was taught in the classroom. And so one of our resource teachers is providing that and has good communication with the staff. She has not had a situation where she hasn't had students, but if that happens, she has a list of students to reach out and contact to see if they can log on and get support. Our counseling requests for this year for individual and group counseling have doubled. Those are requests from parents, from students, from staff, for students to receive counseling. And so we see the need, and we just want to continue to thank for the support that we have with school counselors. Parents want training on Chromebooks, curriculum, parent resources. They're still wanting outdoor areas for the kids to eat so they're not in our cafeteria crowded. And those were ordered last year, and due to all the shipping delays, they're probably out on a they're probably out in the water just floating around waiting for their turn. But we will get those eventually. And then we'll have some outdoor eating areas, and we'll have some outdoor learning areas. We ordered benches and some other things. Grade-level take-home book packs. Kids that are on independent study, the parents have requested book packs for their kids. They've got all the online stuff. They can get into the Google Classroom, but parents want them to actually have some books. So we made up some books, some packets of books by grade level, and so we can just hand them a baggie of books, and then they bring them back, and then we recycle them for another use. We have after-school and before-school library time now, Mondays through Thursdays, and that is a very popular request from parents, and parents will even visit with their kids after schools in the libraries at times, and they'll come in, and that, they'll give a lot of information there about training and stuff, too.
Okay, so basically asking what the parents wanted and knowing that the pandemic is really real, how are we going to close those gaps and how are we going to keep the learning keep going? Well, our answer at Edgewater was really to tap into Lexia. Lexia is a program that I've used for literally over 8 years. I brought it to Olivehurst and I improved the literacy there by 10%. The good thing about Edgewater is that when we first got shut down for the pandemic, we had already started it. We only had it for 2 grade levels at that time, but we did already start, so it wasn't brand new. When that happened, the sales rep reached out to me and said, hey, Jody, how about the rest of your grade level? We'll give it to your school for free. And I thought, what an excellent way, since how can we keep the education while they're at home still going? So that would helped us, because when the district decided to bring it in for all grade, it wasn't new to Edgewater. It helped us allow to get that teacher buy-in, because without the teacher buy-in, we're not going to have the students be able to use it. This is just a glimpse of where we started. That gray area is the below grade level students. So you can see just a short time, this is just for this year since we started about in September, really. We had 82% that started below grade level. This is K through 5th grade only. So we've already decreased it by 17%. That blue area is really what that focus. We want to grow that blue area because that is our grade level material that we're working on. So we started at 15% of our students, K through 5, started on grade level, and currently we have 30% now working on grade level material. That's a 15% increase, and minded, we're growing every day. Lexia is real-time data. It's live. It changes. As students are using it right now, that data is going to change and it's going to grow. 3% started above grade level, and that's what's really good, too, because some students, not everybody, but there are some that need to be enriched too, so we can grow. The good thing about Lexia, it's individualized. This is individualized learning, and this also helps our teachers and empowers our teachers. It empowers the teachers because they're able to take those lessons, the skill builders, and actually teach to that level. So now when they're coming back, those classrooms have all different grade levels. Some are reading at a first grade, even though they're in third grade. This helps them go to teach, and it helps the teachers, gives them the materials to teach at their grade level. Now, our sixth graders are using a program that is by Lexia as well, but it's called Power Up. It still does the literacy foundation skills. It's really the science behind the reading. The difference is it is a little bit more middle school looking. It's not as cartoonish. They've got levels more like a video game, and they really like it. Those are through the foundational skills of word study. We've increased that already by 21%. Our grammar has increased by 9%, and the comprehension is 22%. Again, this is just from September, so it's really real. And when you're looking at the dashboard and when the teachers have access to that, you can literally see those gaps decreasing. And that's what's empowering to teachers, too, because they actually get to see what they're doing is really working.
And we share those with the staff weekly, and they have already grown since we prepared this slide. Our goals are academic performance through the PLC process, goal 2, improve conditions and climate, goal 3, increase parent community involvement and home-to-school communication, goal 4, increase proficiency of our EL students. I'm just going to highlight just a couple things on each goal. I'm not going to go through all of them. But we have collaboration by grade level to determine grade level interventions enrichment based on team common formative assessment data. This is a process that we're getting back into. It kind of halted while we were on our little hiatus. We have supplemental programs and materials. We now have all Chromebooks and headphones for every student. And our kindergarten students, we got touchscreen Chromebooks. And those have been very successful with our kindergarten students. Strategies and conditions and climate. Ms. Evers did a great job on talking about MTSS and RTI and PPIS, and we have some of those processes in place. Our outreach consultant, conscious discipline practices, toolbox and restorative practices, and we have character of the month. We also had a community grant for, we received two grants that were applied for by Mrs. Buddha through our PTO from Walmart for community grants, and so we have community support in those ways as well. Just a brief summary of our LPAC proficiency. Our goal is to get these students that are in level 3, that are in the higher grades, we're targeting them right now to get them moved over to level 4. At level 4, most of those students will be reclassified. We currently have 7 and are working on getting qualifications met for some of the other ones. Some of them need data showing that they're on grade level as their peers. Our total annual budget is there for you. Our largest source is Title I, closely followed by our targeted funds.
At Edgewater, we focus also K through 6th grades all have music. We do have a great music teacher, and she focuses on the different types of language with our music program. It also helps with our social-emotional learning kids that we can, because we connect through the music with them. They help, they collaborate, they can plan and reflect those practices as well. She also goes over with the rhythm and different melodies, so it's really fun to see that as well. At Edgewater, we have a 40% PE educator, and she is working with our grades 3 through 6. She does also help the teachers and helps those lessons with the other kids, K through 2, so it is an extension. All grades K through 6 have access to the track. I've made a schedule, so all grade levels are out there using that track as well and working with her with different lessons. That also helps with our social emotional. Oops. What did I do? What is that? I don't know. Okay, and then we do have a brand new kindergarten wing that Mrs. Guy and I were able to help and work with our construction department really closely and collaborating most of that time when we were shut down. That was a lot of fun. We do have our technology, which we touched on already. We have one-to-one textbook Chromebooks for all of our kindergartners. They have smart boards in their classrooms. Our kindergartners are starting with that Lexia software, and I
I think really that's where you're going to see the growth, and that's going to be fun tracking them and watching them, because they are going to be the first grade level that has 100% using Lexia from the start of kindergarten, and watching them grow all the way through. Our playground have one of the kind in Northern California for that psychomotor playground structures, and we all know that research says that physical connection, that physical movement is actually connected to our cognitive structure there. So that's really fun. We've done a lot of sensory activities out there. When we first were shut down, we were told that they couldn't use the playground. So this is an example of the little sight word squares that they have. The students, I see them all the time out there, jumping from one to one sight word, playing with games that are already on the playground. The classrooms are really large. Each classroom has their own drinking fountains. They have their own smart boards. They do have their own, for safety reasons, they have their own entrance and exits. And then we also have that dismissal app that I'll talk and share that with us as well. Okay, and here's our great playground. And when we first brought this playground in, that large structure, I think all of us were like, is this really for kindergartners? I mean, it was huge. So we went up top, but we'll talk really quickly about that. Just different social skills, their social, emotional, again, sensory stuff that we help with their feelings and connecting that. And then really quickly, our Pick My Kid app, this is something that's still integrating again and getting all of our teachers on board and buying in. We are the first in the district, so thank you for saying yes when we brought this to your attention. It's still a work in progress. We're working on it. We have about a little less than 60% of our parents that are registered using this. It really does help with the amount of calls that are going through the office with our staff. We've reduced that. The safety measure is huge. We have four modes of transportation, a car line, a bus line, then walkers, and after school. It really is a really quick, fast, and it does give us a report. More and more parents are getting on board, and then during our conferences, we're hoping to get the rest of them so we can at least, our goal is at least to get 90% of our families registered for that and make dismissal smooth, easy, quick, and fast and safe. And I put a little video on there, and I think you guys have a copy of this if you want to see how that's working. And lastly, to wrap it up, just some of the fun things that we're doing around Edgewater. It was Red Ribbon Week recently, and so we did plant over 100 red tulips, and those will be blooming in the spring. So if you're around Edgewater, come on by and see those tulips in bloom. Our literacy educator at Edgewater has, she's an amazing artist. She helped me with a playground, painting the stuff on the ground, and now she's able to go in some of those classrooms and actually do art with them. And this is just a small example of her first project that she's been doing with our students. And those are displayed in the cafeteria as well.
Our goal in 2 years is to be known as a model PLC high performance school and to earn awards. We have previously earned the Honor School Award, which is awarded outside of the educational system. It's all on research, and we did receive that for our work with our English language learners. And we'd like to become a California Distinguished School. We will become. And I've worked with a team before, and we have all of the pieces in place. We just have to cement them and get back on track with our PLCs. Yeah. Thank you for your time, and sorry that it went over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Guy, Mrs. Buddha. Are there any comments or questions from board members? Again, thank you.
I would love that, yeah. I see when my brain gets the time off, but it's that I follow.
Next we have updates, business services.
Good evening. So it's been all things COVID in the business services office, and I just want to give a big shout out and thank you to Angela Salcedo, Jordan Wells, and Bobby Vardell for all their hard work working with our employees to obtain vaccination and testing information. So pretty much been it for us.
Thank you. Next we have educational services.
Okay, so just real briefly tonight, and Russell warned me there was going to be feedback from this mic, and he said if I did this magical thing, it might decrease it. It doesn't seem to be helping, but it makes me feel special. Just real brief for tonight, you've seen the presentations from these schools and schools in the other weeks, and so you can probably see a theme as to what folks are working on. For us in educational services, our goal is to help remove those barriers from the outside. So looking at the training of the outreach consultants in order to make sure that those tier one implementation, those interventions that we do early on, work so that you don't get to tier two and tier three and have to have those more intensive interventions. So I could go through all of my team and name all the work that they're doing, but I'll just say the educational services department is working hard to try to remove some of those exterior barriers that exist for the school sites to do the work that they're showing you here in the evenings.
Thank you. Personnel services?
We don't have an update.
Superintendent.
Thank you. Thank you. After seeing Edgewater's performance today, I'll try to beat them. Thank you so much, ladies. You guys did an awesome job. So appreciate your work. I'd like to really start by saying that it is our focus and our commitment that what we do is for our students. Our students drive our work, and our students drive our passion for what we do. Each and every one of us who are here because of the students who we serve. And so I would like to echo the words of my sage friend, my MUTA president sitting back there. We do want to honor and absolutely remember to honor veterans. I also want to take a few minutes to thank especially Angela and the friendship that she's extended to us and the openness for collaborating with us. As I've said before, I'm sure somewhere along the line we'll disappoint them because we will not agree. But I think relationships is the crux of what we do. And if we set the foundation for good friendship and good understanding, when times are difficult, I think we can get through that together. I would also like to mention that the comment that she did make about the work that we are doing with MUTA is so important. Our teachers are the front line to the children we serve. And so our job is to really support our teachers in every way possible and therefore support our principals in the job they do, and it scales up. So we are a service model, and we are dedicated to serving who we work with, and not to forget our parents. Thank you for trusting your children to our schools and trusting the education to our system. We did have, let me go very quickly through some interesting things. This weekend, I don't know if you guys heard the radio show. I think the first time, Francisco, you and I were on radio, right? We didn't know you were on Facebook. I would have put on my red lipstick, but we didn't know. So we did a radio talk show. It was all about promoting college and career technical education in our community and the commitment. Thank you to the Yuba County Office of Education for supporting the work that we are doing in every area we talked about. And in that line, we are also partnering with Yuba County. And thank you, Mr. Doug Riddle, for your push towards adult education and towards the conversation that you are having with me. We are opening up the adult education and the parent education component in our district that was closed since 2014, and we'll be bringing to you some new changes and support for our parents and the adults in the community who are our parents who need the support right now with us so that they can then transition to Yuba College. In that note, visited Yuba College and saw the work that's happening there. Big shout out to Ed Services, Dr. Greco, for your work with bringing in the early college idea and dual enrollment and the conversation with Yuba College president to expand that for next year. So I'm looking forward to what you're going to do there. And Marysville, yes, we wish them the very best, the self-study that's going to happen from November 28th to December 1. Everybody send good wishes to Marysville. They're going to rock it. We do have the student forum, which is scheduled for December 1st. We're going to bring the students to the district office from all the three high schools. We've already had one with them. What's so exciting is our students are directing some of this conversation about where they want the district to go, and they brought in the idea of AVID. So Alicia Wright isn't here. Oh, she's sitting right back there. Thank you, Alicia, for all your work with taking AVID forward. I would also like to end by saying that we have two people I have to call out this time. One is Amy Stratton, the hard work that she's doing in making sure our teachers have a voice and a choice and the conversation about common assessments. And then, of course, Brian Williams. You'll be hearing more about the wonderful virtual college tours that we are bringing into our school. And what is that? VR and AR is now here. We all know that as technology is expanding, we can sometimes don't have to leave our homes to visit certain places, right? So for our students to do college visits, is it necessary that they drive all the way down to Southern California or all the way up to Kansas? But sitting in the college counseling office, we are bringing for every high school the virtual reality college tours. Students can put on their headphones and get into the world of VR and be able to walk through the campuses of colleges and say, I like that campus. I like UC Santa Cruz. I want to go there. What do I need to do to get, you know, my FAFSA completed? Yes, those are the kind of things we're bringing for our children, and I think our children deserve the best. So wishing all our families a very happy Thanksgiving. We know it's time in a few weeks. So please rest up. Thank you to our staff. Thank you to our parents. And most importantly, thank you to the Board of Trustees for everything that you do every day to serve us and to help us do the right thing for our children in this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Israni. Next, we have the approval. Let's see. Russell, can we bring up Mrs. Hasty now, I think? We're kind of getting into some of that voting time. Thank you. The approval of minutes. We have the minutes from the regular board meeting of 10-26-21. Is there any, and the minutes from the special board meeting of 10-28-21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? Either? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve both minutes.
Motion to approve both minutes from Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Raise your hand so maybe I could see there, Allison. Thank you. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that board members would like to have pulled? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Gary Criddle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We got 7 yes. Before I move on, I would like to recognize one of our new principals of Linda Elementary School, Mr. Zachary Schultz. Mr. Zachary, he's here in the back. Also, before we start into the new business, Ms. Lasaga, I think I do. I apologize for my confusion earlier, but I think I have your cards in the right order. If I happen to miss one, please speak up. Okay, new business. Board of Trustees, the annual organizational meeting of the Board of Trustees. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board select a day and time for the annual organizational meeting. Is there any discussion? You'll notice in the recommendation, the recommendation is to have the organizational meeting on 12-14-21. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to have our annual organization meeting on December 14th.
I'm going to be out of town.
21.
have a motion by Trustee Davis to have the organizational meeting on December 14th. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh, second by Trustee Hasty. Thank you, Allison. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Next we have the superintendent. Resolution 2021-22/10, calling for the state officials to recommend and not require the COVID-19 vaccine for students and staff. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to call state officials to recommend and not require the COVID-19 vaccine for students and staff. Is that Dr. Azrani?
Thank you. Yes, this is a resolution for motion for the board, and this is, we understand that in our community we have very diverse needs. We also understand there's also diverse opinions, but what we also know is we represent our community and both voices, both parts of those voices, and so this resolution is saying that we are asking the state officials, we are recommending to them that you can recommend a vaccine, but please don't require it for our staff and students. We also understand very clearly in this resolution that the school district, when the mandate comes down, we do not have an option but to follow the mandate of the state of education. And we want to be very clear that people should not walk away with this misunderstanding of this resolution. But this is our effort to show our community that we hear you, that we hear that a requirement is something that we are asking and the state officials to reconsider.
Is there any discussion from board members?
Is that something that you had on?
Right. I'm going to you guys first, and then I'll go to Mrs. Lasaga.
Okay. I was the one that brought this up, and thank you, Dr. Asrani, for helping out and putting this together. Two drafts were sent out. The first draft I really liked. The second one where we added the final two things, because no place in here did it insinuate or say that we weren't going to follow the mandates if that's what happened. But then we added two whereas that Marysville Joint Unified School District understands that it has an obligation to comply with state and local and directives from the CDHP regarding the COVID-19 vaccine requirements for students, staff, and whereas Marysville Joint Unified School District understands that should the COVID-19 vaccine become a requirement for students or staff in public schools in California, then it must comply with such a requirement. Nowhere did it imply, before you added those two, that we weren't going to. But I think you threw that in there as a safety net, but I liked it better prior to that. I don't know what other board members think, but...
I might send it to
that. Was there a reasoning for adding that? Maybe you could elaborate, please.
Thank you for the clarification. As you saw, we went through multiple versions of the resolution. We are obligated to not only just follow the language of the state, but also as the responsible governance body of the district and the financial stability and the insurance for our staff. JPA, as you know, will hold us responsible. And as you heard today, the new law that came out, hold each board member and the superintendent personally responsible if something should happen under our watch that deviates from the mandate of the state of California. The intent of the resolution is to be very clear to our constituents that we hear them and we are not taking one side over the other, but when it comes down to legal mandates, we as elected officials of the state of California and a district organization that follows the mandates of the state, we don't have it within our authority. And I think Mr. Dr. Rivell has made a really good point. It's the legislature that we should be talking to. They make the mandates. They pass it down to us. So we just have to be very clear because with the emotions of this time, people can misunderstand without that language and think we're promising something that we really don't have a choice. So thank you for allowing me to clarify.
Thank you. Ms. Lasaga? So Russell, if you could set the 3-minute time limit, please.
to address the resolution for this mandate of the vaccine. But before you adopt this resolution, I would ask a couple of things be modified. Whereas I agree with Jeff, but when you talk about, whereas MJUSD understands that should the COVID vaccine become a requirement for students or staff in a public school in California, then it must comply with an agreement. This must become statutorily mandated by the legislature of California as well as the legislature of the federal government. Then MJUSD will follow any said statutorily required mandates enacted under the laws of the federal and state government. In layman's terms, until it is passed through a legislative body, then MJUSD is not required to follow this requirement. This is merely a suggestion. It is a requirement. Also, on the second one, whereas MJUSD understands that it has an obligation to comply with the state and local laws, there should be a period there. The resolution you're saying, you're not saying you're not going to follow the laws of the state and local, but they have to be laws. So the directives from the CDPH regarding the COVID-19 vaccine requirements for students and staff, that sentence should be taken out. Everything else of that needs to go. In the event the directives from the CDPH pass federal constitutional muster, which is legalese, and it has been decided by a court of law, we will then follow that directive. But until then, it's not. It's nothing but that. So define requirement. Under California law, what authority does MJUSD have to stand behind a requirement? Under the state constitution, the federal law trumps the state law. The federal government is being sued right now for mandates by approximately 24 different states. The Biden administration is also being sued for exceeding their authority to enforce these mandates. There is no jurisdiction. So in closing, I would ask that this resolution be shelved until additional comments either from the public are addressed. So when you look at liability and you talk about liability, that if a child is to get COVID and you have that, you're also liable if my kid has to take that vax and there's an injury. So when you make it a choice, you're letting the parent make that decision. But legally, if they get COVID, I've worked in the court of law for 20-something years. You can't prove where they got COVID unless they live in this hypothetical bubble I gave a couple meetings back. But until then, this whole thing, if my kid got that shot and got an injury, by the same token that Ms. Ravella said, you're all liable for that too. So which way do you want it? Wouldn't you rather have the parents make that decision?
Thank you. Any other comments or discussion?
Well, I was trying to follow Ms. Osaga. She's pretty quick. I know with your three-minute deal, can I ask a question of? Okay. So you're asking that we shelve this for tonight and get more input from the community to put this back together and bring it back later? Is that what you're asking?
Well, if you don't want to remove what I asked to be removed, then I'd ask it to be shelved. If you would remove those two things, because no one's ever asking you to not follow the law.
Which two were you referring to?
The same two you were.
The same two that I referred to.
Yeah.
I was trying to follow along.
Correct. So where you have...
Well,
whereas MJUSD understands it as an obligation to comply with the state and local laws, period. The rest of it marked out. Directives, and then the directives from the CDPH regarding the COVID vaccine requirement for students and staff. I'm asking that be removed.
It sounds like, based upon what we've discussed here tonight, we're pretty close to a resolve. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
I think there's just those two little things. And, when you look at the definition of requirement, that's not law. That's not something we have to follow as a requirement.
And I appreciate your information. Thank you very much. Dr. Fowle, in light of what we've heard tonight, some of these some very good points, we may want to take a look at or propose to take a look at revisiting this, and maybe sitting down with some of our constituents and parties just to make sure we're thinking this through as a group, is my 10 cents.
So if we're wanting to table it, all we need is a motion. And then when you want to bring it back.
I'd like to make a motion to table this particular agenda item and to the next, actually, the next board meeting or sooner if we need to do that.
To the December board meeting?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we have a motion by Trustee Doug Criddle to table this item till the December 16 board meeting, I think it was.
14th, I think.
14th? Okay. Thank you, Jeff. So we have a motion by Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Boom. I'm going to do a roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes, to bring this item back at the December board meeting. The only thing I would add to that, I think it would be whatever resolution is put together, I think it would be important to run through our legal to make sure that you're not going to be held liable.
I concur, Mr. Rasmussen. I think this would also be a good opportunity for us to collaborate together. And all, everybody's looking and want the same things for our kids, so I concur.
Next, we have the educational services presentation and agreement with FEV Tutor. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the agreement with FEV Tutor beginning on November 15, 21, ending December 31, 21, in the amount of $260,000 to provide 24/7. Tutoring service across grades K-12. We do have a okay.
Yeah, we have a live presentation. So last time when we brought it to the board meeting, we had a digital presentation, and I think we had some struggles with that. We went ahead and amended the number of hours we were starting with and brought the folks up from FEV to do a live presentation, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Janine Mason. I'm the Manager of Customer Success here at FEV Tutor. And I also have my colleague here with me today, Parisa Marotti. And we're very excited for you to get another opportunity to see what opportunity is at hand for your students and available through FEV Tutor. So we can start with a live demo. I recorded it earlier today just so that we don't have any tech issues. But what you will be seeing is direct access into the student experience and what it looks like for a student to go through a tutoring session with us at FEV Tutor.
Facebook sessions, what is your dashboard?
Students who might prefer to hear their instruction out loud, they still have both contested beachfront parking allows for total contact in the chat box to get set up out back. This is great for any students who have tech speech in their IEP, or if you just prefer to hear the instruction read out loud instead of reading back and forth. Also read their notes aloud as well. Now, in Marysville, we also work with the population of English language learners. All of our instruction is in English, and we use an English language immersion model. We support our English language learners by creating a real-time translation model. This allows students to translate chat in real time to their language of choice, so they're able to go back and forth throughout the lesson between English and their home language. The benefit of this is that students are able to maintain safety with content, also communicate effectively with others. These tutors have had massive success with English language learners from level 2 and up. The results of the language model or the translation model and the way they train our students work with English language learners. Now, something else you probably noticed is that number of students Tutors are trained to award students with participation points for their effort and their engagement. So when students are asking questions, answering questions, taking risks, students are paying attention to that and affirming them throughout the lesson. We are building in elements of socio-emotional learning when students learn about themselves and participation points come. A part of the tutoring that's really engaging students and helps them stay invested in the content as we go. So we're going to jump out of the live session now and then ask my tutor Latoya for our feedback form. Your students do not need to request a feedback form. It's actually generated automatically at the end of every lesson. The reason why is that we take students' voice and feedback very seriously, and we ask students to give us feedback on our sessions and our tutors after every single lesson. Each piece of feedback that's shared is reviewed by the quality assurance team, whose job is to provide additional training to tutors and, in general, improve the experience for each student. The students are not rated at a maximum of 5 points, tutor and the session. And they are able to give written feedback to human doing here. We think that is extremely important. It allows students to show what they love, but also to share any critical feedback they might have that helps with our tutors and our team guys. As you can see, now that my targeted tutoring session is over, my next turn is blue. Apart from targeted tutoring sessions in my career at Skills Lab, students all have access to 24/7 and demand more help and work for support. That means at any time of day or night, students have the ability to work. But get access to a tutor that helps them with their homework, or completing assignments, or even preparing for a test.
All right. Thank you so much for listening there. I thought I saw some issues by recording it. Oh, now it's going again. Can you help me here? Thank you. I thought I saw some issues by recording it in advance, but it still is a little bit choppy. So I want to open it up for any questions that you have. And I can also speak a little bit about the wraparound services that we provide in addition to just what you saw happening in the platform and in the session itself.
Do we have any comments, questions of board members?
One of the questions I have, and just knowing some of the what some kids do, what's to say that a student won't log on and just start clicking buttons for an hour and burn up $26 of money?
Right, that's a great question. So our tutors are monitoring their engagement throughout the session, and if a student is inactive for any more than a few minutes, we actually send automatic alerts to either their parents or their teachers, whomever is registered with us, that lets them know the student has been inactive, and then the tutor is checking in every few minutes on their engagement. We do have the ability for students to indicate that they need a break or that they're
you know, going elsewhere, I need to pause. So if a student hasn't engaged one of those things, then the tutor is paying attention to that and letting an adult know. In addition to that, if a student has been active for more than 6 minutes, the tutor actually just ends the session and then reports that back and gives the opportunity to make it up, because at that point we're assuming that the student is no longer with us.
Thank you. The other question was, I forgot it now. Somebody else go ahead.
I have a couple of questions. On page 45 of our special report, it's referred to as grant hours. So is contract considered a grant?
I can let Parisa jump in here. She was asking about grant hours. If the contract will be considered a grant?
Yeah, so thanks for asking that question. It's actually an annual thing that our company runs. When we have budget left over out of our marketing budget, we will grant hours to school districts that are coming on board. It's left blank right now because we actually don't have a grant program running currently.
Okay, and then my next question is the hours
So the hours actually do roll over. We do. It says that you have to sign a new contract. The reason for that is we get annual access to your data and student rosters, and without an agreement in place, we technically can't have access to that. The hours that you don't use will roll over into summer school and then the next academic year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a question. Great idea. It sounds like something with what the ladies from Edgewater are doing, and what a great way to really focus on the issue with what students are having now. My question has to do with the rollout. So how, we got a new principal in the audience out here, so okay, I'm going to try to put his hat on for just a second. So how do you propose rolling that out to all these schools? And we're going to use this time up in a year. What is the best plan of action so that the students, the parents, the teachers, and administrators can take advantage of this system and maximize $260,000?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it's a challenge that we feel school districts face all the time when you're rolling out a new initiative, because the bulk of that responsibility falls on the school principals and their staff, who are already stretched. This is pre-pandemic. As a result of the pandemic, they're stretched even further. I'm proud to say that our founder 12 years ago decided that we should own the implementation from start to finish, which means each school district is assigned an academic success coach. They're a former classroom teacher under Janine's leadership, and they're basically your project manager from start to finish. So the academic success coach will reach out to each principal and have a building level meeting. They can invite a vice principal, a coach, a grade level lead to be part of that discussion to design a program that works best for their school. We have implementations where schools are 2 miles apart and they are completely different because each school has its own unique needs. The kids are different, the families are different, so we try to customize at the building level depending on leadership availability, flexibility, resources, that sort of thing. The academic success coach keeps a pulse on the implementation at the building level every week when there are challenges that come up or issues with particular students or a particular implementation model. They will reach out to the principal and schedule a building level meeting to discuss it. Pre-pandemic, we were in buildings. Our academic success coaches were in buildings regularly. Right now, about 90% of our work is done remotely unless a district specifically says we have permission to enter buildings.
So, from your experience, how long does it take to implement this program so all the schools have the access?
Yeah, so that is a very unique challenge, and it's unique to each district. We have right down the street, Yuba City joined us a couple months ago. Their implementation's up and running in a 3-week window. They're running a pretty tight ship, and everyone's on board, and we're moving quickly. In Mountain View, closer to where I live, we've been trying to get an implementation off the ground since August. And they're having challenges because there are a lot of issues within that community that we're trying to address. One of them being because they don't have a provider for K-2, they're not going to roll out third grade enough, which is where our space is. So we're on hold until the K-2 provider joins. So really, it's hard for me to answer that question for you right this second because we haven't met with your building level principals to get a sense for how quickly they can get up. On our end, we have a 7-day turnaround from the time you share your roster and your star data with us. Our team starts to create those learning plans and schedule students. So it'll be unique to what is decided at the building level.
Yeah, I have a question too, and it may be more for Rocco than you guys, but with our diverse schools, we have schools in the mountains, we have schools all over the place, but we don't have good internet service up there in a lot of them. How do we address that issue? Okay, thanks.
So that's one of the things we have been discussing, because the equity of everything that we do is always a challenge. We've been looking at the idea, and obviously it's not ideal to not have internet signal up there. The ability, can we put Wi-Fi on some of the buses to be able to have them available? Can we create learning hubs? So can we say, like for Yuba Feather, we're going to have it open and we're going to have staff available from 5 until 9 p.m. Just to keep it monitored so that students are able to come in, sit there in the lab, and be able to have a place to work with internet access. In the ideal world, it's killing me. In the ideal world, we'd be able to get access to everywhere. But in the short term, as we're getting this going, trying to get it out to as many people as possible, it would be using the sites where we know we have internet access, and then finding staff to be able to keep that open to make it available to them after hours.
Thanks. And yeah, Verizon does offer a new program that just came out, brand new. And I know that some people are taking advantage of it up in the hills, and they have internet for the first time. And they've been looking for internet for years. And I mean, this is a program that came out like a week ago.
Yep, they're about 2 years late on the rollout. What that is a 5G using what used to be old radio band, so it's a longer bandwidth that can penetrate through trees. So what they were waiting for is to move the last, so COVID slowed them down, they were moving the last radio TV stations off of those channels so that they'd be able to have that longer bandwidth. It allows it to then travel through more barriers and get access in more areas. And so that is something that Brian is aware of and that we've been working to hopefully be able to get hotspots that will be able to get it out. But in the short term, knowing that that implementation is going to take longer than this one, wanting to have centers or places where they're at least available until we can get that part accomplished.
I remember my question. What is your tutor to student ratio?
So our staffing model is organic and based on need. So we actually add on tutors as we grow partners and decide what are your needs. So there's not quite a tutor to student ratio. However, all tutoring is one-to-one. So what you see is one student with their own personal tutor each session. So what we would do is we would start planning at the district level, think about scope, think about number of students that you'd like to involve, and then we staff accordingly. And that all happens on the front end so that, you know, when we're actually rolling out with schools and ready for students, we're prepared.
Thank you.
So looking back at we were talking about that June 30, 2022 deadline. It looks like our contract actually goes through December 31st of 2022. So if we're going to enter into this, then we're already till second semester or first semester of next year. Is that right?
So the way that works on our end, and then we can try to figure out how that would work on the district's part, if we don't get a signed contract by December 2022, the contract basically expires on our end. We won't be able to roll over hours or continue to provide services. So it needs to be there on the business side for us to be able to say there's a hard stop if we don't get access to your student data for the next academic year.
think the question the board is asking too is, so if we had left our hours at that point and we weren't looking to renew, we could still sign a small contract, and it's just the data security piece. So data security, the way it works in California, only rolls for 1 year. So when we sign this contract, we're going to have to sign a new release in order for the rosters of STAR data and student data to be able to go for them. It doesn't mean we have to naturally re-up and do another $260,000, $300,000 contract, but we would have to do the contracts in order to keep the data privacy there while we finish out the hours that we have. Correct.
Real quick, Barack, I had a question. Are you going to be overseeing this program?
Yes, somebody below me will actually be the one working with it. Yes.
My question was, is obviously we're going to know after kicking the tires and driving it if it's going to be working. Is there a proposed time that maybe we could take a look at some of the data to see how things are going, maybe in, I don't know, March or April or something?
Yeah, definitely. I think bringing it back to show, just kind of like the Lexia data that you saw in the presentation tonight.
That was wonderful, by the way.
Yeah, real live data is kind of what we're moving towards. I mean, and that's what you're seeing in all systems. You're seeing it on the CalPAD sides of things. You're seeing it in everything else. The ability to respond or react to the individual. And it used to be that a classroom was fairly, you go back to the 1940s and 50s, and everyone was kind of at that same point, and it was easy to kind of move a classroom along in a lot of ways. We've gotten to a point where the level of education is very differentiated. And so being able to see that real-time data or be able to move, or have programs that are actually diagnostic and prescriptive to where students are at. So, yes, if you wanted us to bring a presentation back in February or March and say, this is where we're at, this is how many hours we've used, if this is right, this is what we see happening, we could definitely do that.
Any other comments or questions from board members? We do have a public comment. Ms. Lasaga? Ms. Lasaga, can you go up to the mic so we can hear, have it recorded?
Just for clarification, didn't Edgewater already say that they had a tutoring program after school? And how was this then?
Right. So, and Lori or Jody can correct me if I'm wrong. So right now what we're doing is we're utilizing teachers that we have who are willing or available to work. So they found a teacher who's willing to do a couple of hours in the evening to be able to support. So on a small scale, they have that going. Now, if the whole school decided at 6 to 8 o'clock at night they wanted tutoring, they probably wouldn't be able to offer it to the whole school.
Right. And then kind of twofold was that, you know, how are you going to implement it? And then how are you going to see that these kids are actually going to use it?
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. So there's a lot of different ways that we end up designing and implementing tutoring, and it's set up in a way that's flexible so that it can fit into any available opportunity, whether it be built into the school day as part of their MTSS periods, whether it is built into some sort of structured after-school program, which could be the case at many sites. It's also available 7 days a week, so families can and should be accessing it at home for that homework help as well as targeted support. So we provide those flexible scheduling options so that wherever families and students are going to be able to take advantage, they can. And it is really down to the site level in terms of how they decide to, you know, use those hours and set their students up. We do recommend building it into, you know, structured school day programming whenever possible, just because we know we have students there, we have a captive audience who is, you know, ready to learn, and that is where we see the greatest academic impact and gains. I could also speak a bit about the way that we engage families, if, you know, that's of interest as well. I know that, as I, you know, mentioned earlier in the demo, you know, we're aware of our English language learners here at Marysville, as well as just, you know, families at large who are probably needing to get connected to services at different times of day and in different spaces. And so we have a family and student engagement team whose only job is to communicate and engage with families. The team is bilingual, and so we're able to do things like send out text messages, emails, make phone calls in Spanish and English to connect families to the service, answer their questions, and then help them set up tutoring sessions at times that work best for them. So we certainly don't want language to be a barrier to access or, you know, scheduling and time frames, and so we try hard to be flexible in both of those areas.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? I'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor, say aye.
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 Congratulations, ladies.
Thank you.
Motion carries 7-0.
Looking forward now, okay?
So, Mrs. Guy and Mrs. Buddha, I know you've had a really long day, and you're going to have another really long day tomorrow, unless you just really want to stay for the remainder.
We're going to fill a couple more hours.
It's.
How busy.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation.
Yes, it was great.
Okay. So item number 2, new board policy 0415, equity. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board the opportunity to complete the second read and approve the new board policy 0415, equity. The public hearing is now open. Do we have staff that's going to briefly talk about that, or we talked about this last time in the first reading? And okay. Any questions from board members? No?
Questions right now? Yeah, I don't like this new board policy at all. What happens if we don't adopt it? And, you know, I did quite a bit of research on this equity, equality, and all that stuff. And I came up with something that pretty much describes the way that I feel about it. And I did find it on Google, you know, looking at different articles. I watched a bunch of YouTube videos of different school districts talking about it. I watched different doctors. I watched different people of all shapes and sizes talking about it. And this is what I came up with, and this is how I feel about it. Equity versus equality, critical race theory, and equity are very similar in their ideology and end results. Equity is not the same as equality. Equity is tied to the term social justice. Equity means equal outcomes, which is very different from equal opportunities. Social justice demands things to be taken from individuals in one identity group and given to those in another in order to achieve equity. Individual achievement, character, and responsibility do not matter. So that's why I have an issue with it. To me, this equity, social justice thing reeks of discrimination and stereotyping. So I will never vote for something like that. I think that it should be equal opportunity for every child. It shouldn't be drawn to this discriminatory and stereotypical stuff that we're leaning towards today. And if you've been watching the news lately, this is starting to get lambasted all over the country. I mean, people are talking about it. People are upset about it because this equity is not equal. It's showing that we are teaching kids to discriminate. Kids are not born knowing how to discriminate. They are taught how to discriminate. So.
So, Dr. Greco, tell us why we're taking a look at this board policy. Where did this come from?
So there's many reasons that we're taking a look at this policy. So when you look in general at what comes from CSBA and recommended policies, so you guys have talked about legality and some of the other stuff tonight, what this policy, and I know in the media there's a left and a right opinion that kind of come out about this and feelings, and this isn't about taking anything away from anyone. This is basically saying that we're going to look at what we do to make sure that we're serving everybody. So much like the data that they were talking about in their presentations, if you look through the policy, you're not going to find anything about critical race theory or any of the other things that are being discussed. This is making sure that everybody has an equal opportunity. And we understand in that there's not going to be equal outcomes because not everyone's going to engage, but we're going to do everything that we can within our power to make sure that that option is available and there for students.
There's some scary verbiage in number 5, adopting curriculum and instructional materials that accurately reflect the diversity among student groups. That comment that sentence bothers me a little bit, along the lines of what Jeff's saying, but maybe a little bit different, because I hear, you know, we all hear stuff on TV. I hear stuff from constituents in my group and in other schools that are within our district that teachers take upon it themselves to go ahead and step outside of those bounds, which, quite frankly, you know, it happens. To what degree, I don't know. But that, just the verbiage in that kind of scared me a little bit. Not scared me. It made me really think about what this says, and how we would be looking at applying that. And quite frankly, it does bother me a little bit.
Well, and I would say for number five, where it says adopting curriculum, that's always something that's going to be brought before the board. So there's nothing that's going to be brought in. So if there's something that you're worried about for our community or something that you don't want, you as a school board have the right to dictate within the law what that can or can't be. So any of the adoptions that we do go through a formal process, and so any materials like that are going to come through. Now, if a teacher was doing something one-off, that's not something that's addressed in the adopting policy. So that would be any curriculum coming through you guys.
Are you getting off?
You are going to see updates coming just about every meeting. The last major policy revisions for the district were done in 2008, so we're behind on policies. We're trying to bring the ones that are the most important when it comes to FPM, when it comes to the other instruments that we deal with, and going slowly and methodically through them. These were the ones that came up in that process. So, but you will be seeing policies probably every board meeting for the next couple of years.
Can I make one comment to Mr. Boom's comment? I think I hear what you're saying. I think it actually does, to an extent, what you want us to do. We have in our community our students in poverty. We have students who are English language learners, students with special needs. What this policy does is holds us accountable that we are serving those students, in your verbiage, equitably. So if we have resources that we're making sure we're not saying, well, you know, divvy the money around everybody, knowing that our special education students might need a little bit more. Our English language learners might need a little bit more. It's similar to your vision. The language sometimes sounds, you know, so legal, but it's basically just saying, look out for the children in your community who don't have the opportunities like everybody else. Our English language learners, students in poverty, our foster youth and homeless, make sure you have supports for them. Consciously make that effort. That's just pretty much what it's telling us to do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I want every child to have the opportunity to learn. And I want them to have every opportunity that everybody else has. But when we start using the word equity that gets tied in with these other discriminatory things that have been being said out there, why do we have to use equity? Why do we tie it to that? Why do we use the word equity when it talks about critical race theory and identifying with social justices? To me, that gets discriminatory. And we don't. The last thing I want is our kids to get taught to be discriminate against anybody. And like I said, that is not something they're born with. That's something they learn.
Excuse me, Angela.
What do I hear?
Angela. Well, that's too bad. So, anyways.
Oh, Dr. Greco
is... That's just what some of the research that I've done and some of the things I've seen, some of the videos I've watched, and I've watched all kinds of them. I've read all kinds of articles. And I just want to make sure that this doesn't go down that road, that this is equal for every child.
And I think we've heard, we completely understand your concern because people can skew their thinking, but we have to be conscious that we have within our student body the haves and the have-nots. And we if we're not intentional about serving our students in poverty, English language learners, foster youth homeless, we could make decisions that say serve all, but sometimes we have to consciously serve those who need a little bit more consciously with more efforts. I think Angela had a comment. Sorry, Angela.
Actually, what I'd like to do is to recognize Mrs. Lasaga first for your public comment. And then we'll go with Angela. Thank you, Dr. Greco.
So in the Declaration of Independence, it states, and I quote, all men are created equal.
What a person chooses to do with their life is up to them. One cannot continue to help a person if they don't want help. The difference between equality and equity is as follows. Equality means the state of being equal, especially in status, rights, and opportunities. Equity is one of those terms that everyone seems to understand at some visceral level, but few people share the same definition. Equity's definition, according to Merriam-Webster, is fairness or justice in the way people are treated. So as it reads in CBSA's 0415 document, it lists the identified student groups and that the goal is to provide equity of opportunity and equity of access to program services and resources that are critical to closing the achievement gap between students. That means that you no longer want certain students to be overachievers. You want them to all do the same and not have any that are outstanding. I find this whole document racist. It is racist against the students who are putting in the hard work and going above and beyond. You're not helping them. Are you not going to help them rise above and become better for society and the workforce? So not every one of these students are going to be brain surgeons and rocket scientists. Some may even be heavy equipment operators or ditch diggers, and guess what? That's fine. Society needs all of them. Whatever happened to the goal of reading, writing, and arithmetic? Shouldn't that be what the teachers are focusing on? The only place where all the outcomes are equal is in a communist society. Is that what you're striving for? Because maybe your teacher should have spent a little more time on history. These are the same Democrat policies that are telling minorities they are too dumb to get an ID and function in society. So what are you trying to gain here? I think it's time that they get back to the basics of teaching the three R's. If a student needs help with any of those, regardless of their race or socioeconomic status, a teacher should by all means help them get up to their grade level. These students should never be separated by race, and yet here you are doing it. Isn't that it in and of itself reverse discrimination? Why would you ever want to stop or slow a student from progressing? So I would be asking that you vote no on adopting this policy. But the thing of it is I know you're laughing at me at this moment and that maybe I don't understand it, but this is in layman's terms what it reads and how we read it. And don't get me wrong, I think, you know, all students, why does it have to pick out every race in that policy? It doesn't say anything about the white kid. Why not? It talks about every single other race but that. So are you not going to help that maybe white kid who's not doing as well? When you look at my children, I have two. I've got an overachiever and one could care less if he ever attends another day of school. And so do we treat them differently? Do we treat them the same? You have to stop thinking that every single kid is going to be okay. And every single educator who got up here tonight, every single one, the Edgewater, everything, you guys all want to talk about equity. Knock it off. Get back to teaching these kids. You should be treating every single child equally, no matter what. I don't care if the guy's got multi-million dollar dad or somebody who's homeless. They should be treating those kids equally.
Thank you, Ms. Lasaga.
Just to that effect before Angela, if that's where the board feels, equally would mean we don't care about the foothills having no signal or any of the rest of it. Like, we're just going to put out our program, you get it or you don't get it, and we're going to treat y'all equally.
Angela?
Just as a little opening comment here, please understand that I am not just the president of the teachers union, but I also happen to be somebody who was born and raised here. And so I will tell you right now, speaking on my own, not representing UTA, representing myself as an educator and somebody who was born and raised here, I can't believe that we are sitting in an open public meeting where other people are actually going to see what we are doing and have this reflect on our children, our teachers, our community. This is unreal. We're not talking about trying to keep students down. We're not trying to make some high achiever an underachiever. That's not what this is about at all. You will also notice that socioeconomic is in there. As one of those kids in school all the way through, the lower socioeconomic kids, that applies to me. As somebody who is Native American, yeah, the other end of it applies to me as well. As somebody who is female, it applies to me as well the whole way I was going through school. I will tell you, though, I have students in my classrooms every day that I'm sorry, I can't just ignore the fact that they're a student of color. I can't ignore the fact that they're poor. I can't ignore the fact that they're a foster student. I can't ignore the fact that they have other issues outside of my classroom, and I'll be damned if I'm going to act like it doesn't exist and it doesn't happen. It's not. I'm not going to sit here and say I can't address that and that's not my problem. It is my problem. Every single one of my kids is my problem every day, 365.
Thank you. Is there any other comments or discussion from board members? I'll entertain a motion to close the public Dr. Greco? No.
Oh, okay.
Entertain a motion to close the public hearing. Have motion to close by Trustee Davis. Is there a second? Second by Trustee Crawford. Now we'll entertain a motion regarding Board Policy 0415.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. We're going to do a roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
No.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
No.
Trustee Hasty?
No.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
No.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion does not carry. The four no votes were from Trustee Criddle, Trustee Hasty, Trustee Doug Criddle, and Trustee Boom. Next we have Board Policy 5145.3, Non-Discrimination Harassment. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board the opportunity to complete the second read and approval of the new board policy 5145.3, Non-Discrimination Harassment. Dr. Greco?
So the board has had the policy since last time. Is there anything discussion-wise they would like to look at with this policy?
So again, this is the second read of this policy. And has the policy changed at all in the writing from the first reading that we did?
No, there would never be a change between first and second read.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? I'm sorry, I didn't. Okay, so I do have a public comment card. Ms. Lasaga?
I covered all my bases this time. So the problem today is with the implementation of more and more laws. So why do we even need more? When we talk about harassment, isn't that sort of redundant? Instead of putting more and more laws and rules on the books, it's about time you start implementing what you have. So what if I told you there was a teacher at MJUSD that refuses to grade students' work and then gives their final grade an F or a D? What if I told you there was this teacher at MJUSD that called their students retarded? What if I told you there was a teacher at MJUSD that called students whores? And what if I told you there was a teacher at MJUSD that was drunk in a public at student activities? Would you all do something about it? Would you just say, well, she's been here for a long time, we'll ignore it? Would you actually discipline the teacher, or would you blame it on the student? What if I told you you had an excellent student on your campus that has represented MJUSD in a phenomenal way? What if I told you that this teacher retaliated against the student for unknown reasons, but has tried to stop her from advancing? Would that teacher be disciplined, or would you wait for some new harassment policy to be passed? Oh, and by the way, you do have a teacher who's done all those things and continues to do all those things. So you should try reading some personnel records. And oh, guess what? By the way, nothing's happened to this teacher. So go ahead and pass another rule, because that'll help. So everything within CBSA 5145.3 is redundant and does not need to be implemented. It's already within the board policy. You're probably going to approve it. And my only request would be, instead of saying student in the harassment section, you should say teacher and student.
Is there any other discussion for the public hearing? I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Crawford. Again, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Oh, wait. We are motion. Motion carried to close the public hearing. We don't need to do that one. Okay, now let's try a motion regarding Board Policy 5145.3.
I just have a quick comment. That's very disturbing what I just heard, and I don't want to hear any names, but if that's actually true, then yeah, something needs to be done, brought forward to the board, because I have not heard that. No.
Motion to approve. Excuse me. I will be speaking.
Okay.
Sorry.
So let's see. I got backwards here. So we got a motion to close the public hearing. Now we need a motion regarding Board Policy 5145.3. Is there a motion?
I'll repeat that again. Yes, there is a motion. I make that motion.
To approve it?
Approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Now we're going to do a roll call. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Is your mic on, or is that yes? I'm having a hard time hearing.
Sorry, yes.
Okay, Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next we have Board Policy 5145.7, sexual harassment. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board with the opportunity to complete the second read and approve the new board policy 5145.7, sexual harassment. The public hearing is now open. Is there any discussion?
And these are out of order in the back, so this is page 70.
No discussion. Is there any from the public that would like to talk on this matter? Entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Doug Criddle. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion to close carries 7-0. Now is there a motion regarding Board Policy 5145.7.
Motion to approve.
Whoa. Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Number 5, Board Policy 4010, non-discrimination in district programs and activities. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board the opportunity to complete the second read and approval of new board policy 0410, non-discrimination in district programs and activities. Public hearing is now open. Any discussion on this particular item? Anyone from the public wishing to talk?
I had a comment.
Sure.
This one I found disturbing on page 81, third paragraph down. District programs and activities shall be free of any racially derogatory or discriminatory school or athletic team names, mascots, or nicknames. I'm thinking the Marysville Indians are probably going to be the next on the target.
Oh, we've fought that too many years. I wouldn't think that would push it over the edge now. We've had people want to change it. When I was at Linners for 30 years, it was the Blazers and the Devil, but the Devil's still there. So I get your point.
That's what this is saying, Frank.
I get your point.
And I have had the opportunity to work with some of the people at the American Indian Education Program. Not as much as I would like to. I was tutoring a student for a while who was in that program, and that's something that I believe in. I think the whole concept of having a mascot that somebody's offended is ridiculous. I'm sorry. I'm part Native American as well. I disagree with it.
I don't think every... Can I make a comment? I don't believe every part of this policy needs to be reacted to. I think we might be stretching some of the language. The language comes down for places where they do have derogatory names. If the community here is okay with the Indians, I don't see anybody coming and saying no to it. It just means it's a policy that's saying be aware And what we say up here in the podium, you know, we make policies, so we implement the policy. So just know, not every bit of the policy means it has to be implemented from A through Z. You will have the opportunity to discuss should a question come.
When looking at these, for at least myself, Gary and Jeff and everybody, I'm reading these verbatim, you know. And it's, I got highlight notes for 40 pages. So, okay, that helps clarify a little
bit. And I'm going
to
take a risk and say that what happened in the equity policy is sending shockwaves through this teaching community right now. And we need to hear that from your superintendent. It is a shocking vote that we just passed as a governance committee. I would urge you that if that is done with the comment of one person from the member of the community, that is absolutely unacceptable to me as the superintendent of this district. We serve every single child, and what we just passed is we don't care. That's what the interpretation is, and I'm sure we're going to get shockwaves for the education community. Our teachers and our families in tears for what we've done. I would recommend, please direct me to bring this equity back to you in the next board meeting with a proper explanation, because I don't think we did a good job. And let me own this. It's on me. I didn't do a good job explaining to you what that board policy actually was. That's on me. And it went by so fast, I didn't see it happening. I'm reeling from it. It's what we have done today is we have said to our students, we really don't care for the struggles they have, that we treat everybody equally, and we know that's not true. I know you as a board don't do that. You have the biggest heart that I've seen in the 3 months I've been here. I think I did a lousy job today of telling you what that policy meant. So please direct me to bring it back again, because it's going to break our teachers and our community apart.
I would like to have to put that on the agenda next meeting.
It's already been there, Frank. I would just like to say, though, thinking back to our board protocols, and maybe board members did contact you when this agenda came out, but that is one of our board protocols. If we have any concerns or we have questions about any of these agenda items, we say that we're going to contact the superintendent to try to get some explanation before we get here and throw her under the bus in front of the public. So I think, again, we need to review our board protocols and make sure we try to follow those until our December 7th meeting, and you decide you want to change some of those. Because I just saw Dr. Azrani say nobody contacted her prior to tonight with any concern, and I really don't think we're looking at us as a governance team. Seems to me there's a lot of individuals here that are not looking at the team. Angela, go right ahead.
So I'm going to try really hard to make sure that what I have to say doesn't come off as being a direct attack on anybody or anything of that sort. But putting it mildly, I think it's rich to bring up now all of a sudden somehow possibly being offensive, or now you want to take umbrage and somehow support non-discrimination when you were just discriminatory as I've ever seen in this room. So I just would like you to think about the extraordinary hypocrisy that is being exhibited to our students and to your, I don't know, 1,000 employees, 10,000 students, how many families, 25,000 people that live in this community or more? Hypocrisy. You vote down an equity statement, an equity policy, but now you want to have questions about a non-discrimination policy and have concerns about what one of your school mascots might be? You just took care of that when you voted down the equity policy. So I don't know why you would have a concern about it now. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this item? Entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Davis. Is there a second? Second by Trustee Boom. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Now we'll entertain a motion regarding Board Policy 4010. We have a motion to approve by Trustee Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 6, Board Policy 1312.3, Uniform Complaint Procedures. Purpose of the agenda item is to provide the Board the opportunity to complete the first read of new Board Policy 1312.3, Uniform Complaint Procedures. This is an informational item only. Dr. Greco?
Okay. So in compliance with the annual update of the UCP, this brings forward the most updated CSBA language. There is some additional language that comes from the federal government that's added onto this. So Jamie Larson works very hard on this through our FPM module as well. This one was updated, I believe it was 2 years ago, 1 year ago, 1/14 of 20. So you can see in red the changes this year that have been added to this policy. This is the uniform complaint policy for when there's complaints for specific areas in the district.
Any questions or comments? Thank you, Dr. Greco. Next, we have personnel number 1, addendum to the tentative agreement with AMACE. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the governing board approve the addendum to the tentative agreement, TA, between the Marysville Joint Unified School District, and the AMACE Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Yes, okay. On November 1st, 2021, the district and AMA signed an addendum to the TA that they reached on June 28th, 2021. This addendum is as a result of a Me Too clause, and the addendum calls for an additional 1% retroactive to July 1st, 2020 for the 2020-21 school year. This addendum is intended to settle all proposals between the parties for 2021 and 21-22 school years. The staff recommends that the board approve the addendum to the TA.
Any discussion between board members? We did have a public comment card from Mrs. Lasaga.
I'm sorry, that was poor taste.
Okay, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 2, 2021-22 initial bargaining proposal from MUTA to the MJUSD. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to introduce the initial proposal from the Marysville Joint Unified Teachers Association, MUTA, to the MJUSD for the 2021-22 school year. We're going to hold a public hearing. Ms. Basaglia?
Sure. This is in accordance with the Educational Employment Relations Act and Government Code. All initial proposals of exclusive representatives and of public school employers which relate to matters within the scope of representation shall be presented at a public meeting of the public school employer and thereafter shall be public records. Representatives for MJUSD will work with the leadership of MUTA to establish bargaining dates. It is recommended that the board hold a public hearing. A motion is required to close the public hearing.
Any other comments or question, discussion? We'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 3, 2021-22 initial bargaining proposal from MJUSD to MUTA. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board to hold a public hearing to introduce the initial proposal from the Marysville Joint Unified School District, MJUSD, to the Marysville Unified Teachers Association, MUTA, for the 2021-22 school year. Public hearing is now open. Ms. Pasalia?
Yes, this is also in accordance with the Educational Employment Relations Act and Government Code, and it's also within the scope of representation, shall be presented at a public meeting of the public school employer, and thereafter shall be public records.
Any other comments, questions? Anyone from the public wishing to talk? Entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Item number 4, substitute teacher pay rate increase. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the new pay rate increase for substitute teachers effective 11/10/21 as follows. Long-term rate 21 plus days, is $200 per day. Is Dr. Greco?
We're bringing this forward. We have a shortage of substitutes. We've created a direct linkage now with Tri-County Substitutes in order to be able to hopefully create a deeper pipeline. We're looking to bring some substitute teachers hired on, like basically as subs for the year, so they would be with us for the entire time. In order to attract and retain, when you go and you look at the sub rates paid across, 200 would put us at the highest local rate, hoping that brings in just that little bit of extra money, the relief that our teachers need to keep the classroom stocked and open.
Any comments, questions, discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Gary Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Business Services, Resolution 2021-22/11, to establish Capital Outlay Special Reserve Fund. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to establish a Capital Outlay Reserve Fund, Fund 40. Ms. Pasalia?
Thank you. The Special Reserve Fund for Capital Outlay Projects exists primarily to provide for the accumulation of general fund money for capital outlay purposes. This fund may also be used to account for any other revenues specifically for capital projects that are not restricted to our funds 21, 25, 30, 35, or 49. Other authorized resources that may be deposited to the Special Reserve Fund for capital outlay projects are proceeds from the sale or lease with option to purchase of real property and rentals and leases of real property specifically authorized for deposit to the fund by the governing board. This has also been established. We need to establish this reserve fund for our certificate of participation that's sitting in another fiscal agent. We'd like to pull it over to the county, and we need Fund 40 for our capital outlay reserves.
Any questions, discussion? We do have a public comment card from Joanna Lasaga. Looks like Joanna left. Entertain a motion.
Motion
to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Item 2, public hearing for trustee area boundaries. The purpose of the agenda item is to hold a public hearing regarding the 2020 census to review the information on the population of trustee areas within the MJUSD as required by Education Code 5019.5. The law requires the board review their trustee area boundaries after the 2020 census so they are in compliance with the one person slash one vote concept. Public hearing is now open. Do we have any staff that wants to talk about this?
Ken Reynolds with Schoolworks here to a presentation. Do you have him, Russell?
Right. We have a presentation.
Coming in via Zoom.
Good
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Brian Reynolds from School Works. Ken Reynolds is working at a 12-14, so I've been asked to present to you. We're presenting a several options that we have put together to rebalance the populations of the trustee areas of your district. We've got a list of general guidelines that we try and follow in drawing these boundaries, following topography and geography, whether it's rivers or streets, trying to keep communities together. There's a requirement that these areas are contiguous, and we took into consideration the current location of your trustee to make sure that we weren't creating an option that would unintentionally unseat some one of the board members. And then, of course, we're required to try and get an equal population within the 10% deviation. It was pretty simple to create some options for your district. Area 1 and Area 2, both were very well. I'm open to hearing that and responding to any questions you may have.
Thank you. Board members, do we have any questions or comments? So we lost Mr. Crawford, huh? I do have a public comment from Joanna Lasaga. Not here. My comments, you know, looking at the three options of those of the maps, map B looks like maybe it doesn't disrupt as many folks in one area. Maybe it would be easier to try to tell those people now you're going to be in Area 4 versus Area 3. The other two for A and C are fairly large geographical areas that are going to, I don't know how many, you know, in that area, how many board or people are going to know who their board representative is. I guess that's our job to tell them that. But it looks like, you know, maybe Area B would be the smallest area that we would have to inform that public.
And I guess my question would be to the current board members from those areas, what does this mean to you with this shift? Does it make sense to you?
It makes sense to me. I
would concur with that. We did this in 2012, and this looks almost, it's pretty, not very significant. I added it 10 years ago, a little bit of East Linda. No, West Linda. I remember who.
Is there any discussion? We'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries 7-0. Now we need a motion regarding the adoption of one of those A, B, or C. Is there a motion?
I move that we approve the
Okay, we have a motion by Trustee Hasty to approve Map B. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Boom. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-yes. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you. Now that we've approved the map, we'll begin putting together the documentation required to get those boundaries updated.
Thank you.
Okay, item number 3. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to do the presentation. Item 4, then item 3. Oh, okay. So, a little change in the agenda.
Why is that?
So wouldn't the presentation be, couldn't we call that just part of the public hearing?
Yeah, usually that's the way it would be. If we had a public hearing without anything that had been said, there would be nothing to comment on. So, yes.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and just stay with that, and the presentation will be a part of the public hearing.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay. And knowing tonight was long, this is a 5-slide presentation. It's very brief. We met with some different stakeholders. Like Angela said, we had a meeting the other night to look at this. The Educator Effectiveness Grant. Basically, what is it? This is one-time funding that's given to us, not just for the training of teachers, but for the training of paraprofessionals, administrators, and it's for classified staff in order to promote educator equity, quality, and effectiveness. LEAs that receive funding pursuant to the Ed Code, they have to develop a plan and adopt it by December 30th, so you'll see this here tonight, and then it will come back at the final meeting for approval. The plan will present in a public meeting, and so we're meeting all of these right here. And so under this educational code, this is to train basically all of the staff that we have that work with children here in the school district. So allowable uses that you can look at, coaching and monitoring of staff serving instructional settings, so beginning in teacher, administrator induction, programs to create effective standard aligned instruction. So you heard about the program that Amy Stratton is working on. That would be something that would fall into this if you need to. Improvement of instruction and literacy across all subject areas, practices and strategies, trying to re-engage pupils to lead to accelerated learning, especially after COVID, and we had gaps before that as well, to create a positive school climate. We have strategies to improve pupil well-being, both social and emotional. You heard about the increase in the number of 5150s this year, as well as counseling requests, suicide prevention, and then access to mental health services. You can also use it for inclusive strategies for universal design to learning. So this would be like universal screeners. So where we start looking at what students need when they come into school as preschool and kindergartners. Instruction and education to support implementing effective language acquisition. We know that language is the basis for all learning. New professional learning networks, so being able to create connections. We talked about a little bit in our meeting the other day, the UC Davis Math Project and how some of the staff at Marysville High School have been working with them for years and some of the things they've seen come out of that, as well as instruction, education, and strategies. So nutshell, here's kind of the budget when we were working with teachers and administrators, what we kind of came up with, things that we need to see or that we want to see. And again, these budget numbers are rough. You have to kind of create a plan. What you're going to see is that plan gets heavier in 22, 23. What we wanted to acknowledge right now is that everybody is stretched to their limits, and that if we implement too much right now, we felt like it would be a waste of money. So there were some things that we thought we could make good gains on initially right out the gate. So providing ELD students GLAD strategies for substitutes or getting substitutes for, and this is partially the resolution you saw to increase rates earlier, to be able to release teachers to get some of these ELD strategies that we've been lacking. Provide training for EL classroom paras on support strategies with elevation. So the board voted in a program that made monitoring of ELD student progress easier for our staff. And this would be doing professional development in order to make that more fluid as it goes. And then providing professional training for classroom support for special education. And so this is basically the push-in model where we're trying to be more inclusive, including students in classrooms. But we started small this year. So those three trainings were kind of the areas we thought outside of the other things we already had going that fit in, that worked well for this year. 22-23, you see the program starts to become more robust. In here, you've got the hiring. We have two literacy coaches this year. This would provide one math elementary instructional coach and then one science instructional coach. So part of the thing when we look at schools and engaging students, and you've heard Dr. Fall talk about creating STEM and STEAM schools, is making school fun. If you're having fun, you tend to have less emotional problems. You tend to get in less trouble. Right now, when you're trying to get caught up, what ends up happening is you do a lot of math and a lot of English. But making sure that we can understand cross-curricularly that those things can be acquired through history, they can be acquired through science as well. In there, outside of the teacher and paraeducator realms, you've got administrative internship programs, so working with our new administrators in order to give them some of the training that we felt that they had been lacking. Bringing in UDL and RTI strategies, and we have Nevada County in a question mark because they are a local agency that does do some of these trainings, so Universal Design for Learning. In response to intervention. This is kind of what we were talking about with the programs that are both diagnostic and prescriptive, so kind of like Edmentum or some of the other ones that assess where the student's at and then create a pathway for them, so working on training towards that. Trauma-informed and restorative practices, so when things like tonight, you can feel the tension in the air. When things like that happen, being able to sit down and have a conversation to bring things back together to be productive for the group. So those are strategies that are definitely needed in the classrooms as well. A big push towards Avid, and you saw this across multiple plans. So the price tag to truly implement Avid with fidelity, it's going to cross a couple of funding sources here. But Avid is something we believe is key, and it's something that we had in the district before and we've let go, and we want to see come back. And that was across the board from administrators and teachers and families. And then project-based learning, it was the other piece. And that's when you start talking about the STEM and STEAM programs. We put a couple of these 2 years out because we knew that we would have to start, we would have some other areas where they were going to start going. But really looking at what it takes to be project-based, it takes some alignment between grade levels and departments and across the curriculum levels. And we thought that pushing that harder a couple years out would make a good balance for us. Usually you'll see a separate plan for MCAA. We've included MCAA in this plan because the money's coming to the LEA in one. So this is all in one inclusive plan. Timeline for an adoption is December 30th. The funds expire June 30th, 2026. And then we have the final expenditure report that goes in September after that. And that's the presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. Board members, do you have any comments, discussion? Angela, we do have a public comment.
So I mentioned earlier during my MUTA comments the fact that members from MUTA, from our curriculum consulting team and our exec board met yesterday in an input session on these items. And so we did look at all of these. We did a lot of work yesterday in brainstorming ideas, bringing ideas together, trying to find kind of like things going with like things and where things overlapped.
And so on the teacher end of things in particular, the item you see that's the reading instruction, reading intervention strategies, effective reading instruction strategies for struggling readers, students who are multiple grade levels behind, that is the number one pressing issue from the teachers in the district. And so it did make it through the final cut. And so it is on there, which we appreciate, and we did adjust dollar amounts even. But on MUTA's end of things, we would like to ask, suggest, however you want to take it, that possibly the instructional coaches, the math instructional coach and the science instructional coach, there are other grants, there are other funding sources that can be used for those salaries. And the only reason we say that is because that ends up being $800,000, those two instructional coaches, out of $2.4 million. So you're looking at a third of the funds being spent on that. Without the reading instruction and the focus there, then none of those other things really matter. If our students cannot read to grade level, if they're reading three, four, five grade levels behind, we can have all of the math instructional coaches and all of the NGSS and all of the project-based learning, all the AVID that we want, but if our students can't read, that is where we have kind of critical mass. And we were having issues with this before the pandemic even hit, but the pandemic, of course, exacerbated the situation and made it exponentially worse at this point. And so I just wanted to make sure that the board, and we mentioned this yesterday in our input session, and like I said, it was taken there. But there are other pockets. I don't want to put Jennifer on the spot, but there are other pockets of money, other budget categories that salaries can come out of. There are grants even for math instructional coaches in particular that I could think of. I believe there is one actually for NGSS as well. And so there are some other means, some other methods to try to come up with the money for those salaries. So take it with a grain of salt or take it with something more substantial than that. But that was just our input on it, so thank you.
Angela, question real quick. Do you have a proposal if we take that money, the $800,000, because that's a big buck, a lot of change. What money would that go to? What would it go to?
For me and my unit, we would put it predominantly towards reading instruction and subs. I mean, those to get teachers out of their classrooms to get some of that training, to where we make sure that teachers are getting that training instead of it being during optional times. I would say that, or even possibly adding other optional times where you would have to pay the teachers at their hourly rate for that. So that's mainly where we would put it. I'm sure that there are other things where, you know, we may very well be able to look at it and say, you know, a few more dollars here or a few more dollars there. I mean, AVID is a very expensive program to pull off and pull off well and do it effectively. I know Alicia's been working on the numbers a lot on that, and Alicia's worked on that in the past, and so she could probably give you better information on that than I could, that's for sure. But that's what I would say.
So would we have to, like, table this and then rework it and bring it back? Or, I mean, do you guys agree with... I mean, does staff...
Yeah, I could respond to that if I may. I think the request that Angela is making is pretty valid, but we believe the Education Effectiveness Grant is meant to support educators. It's not all about extra additional time. It's about putting people there who are qualified, like coaches, whose entire dedication is to support science, support mathematics. And I think that is something we desperately need in this district. We desperately need... The item that she's mentioned, I will tell you, she's right on the money, but we've got lots of Title I and Title II to spend on that. So we cannot use Title I and Title II to hire bodies because that's a different category. We do hire, but it doesn't go that far. But this money was specifically given to provide teacher support through coaching, teacher support through for the work that we're doing. So I would say that we cannot table it. It's a two-part. It has to come to read today. I mean, today is just reading,
right.
And then it comes back next time for voting.
Yes.
And I will tell you, she's right on the money. We need to make sure teachers are getting time, but we have other sources of funding we can use for that, specifically Title I and Title II.
So,
Dr. Greco, again, if we presented this plan right here, I mean, are we locked into this clear to 2026, or are we evaluating each of these every year and maybe take a look at it?
Yeah, we would be evaluating. So you can see there is some flexibility when you give you these grant plans. I don't think they expect that you're going to lock in stone what you're going to do for 5 years. You're going to have to respond to what happens over the next 5 years. So we may get into these trainings, and we may find that we find that magic bullet, and all of a sudden reading starts to become easy for kids, and we get that taken care of. And then that might be one of those areas where we say, you know what, we had this funding going on. We're going to shift some of these funds down to more of the project-based learning because we got ahead faster than we could. So there is the flexibility to adjust as we go. You have to present a plan that generally aligns with what you're trying to do in a district and looking at the gaps that you have identified by your stakeholder groups.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion? We'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Item number 4, we already had the presentation. Approval for the District Educator Block Grant. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the District Educator Block Grant as presented in the public hearing. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the grant.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Trustee Doug Criddle.
Criddle.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Thank you all very much. Meeting adjourned.